I'll be gone next week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'll be on the road and going to do some learning.
Listening audience has one of these jobs either. But it's this constant threat, this constant fear that you're not working hard enough, that you're not meeting productivity goals, you're not doing enough. So you're busting your behind constantly to try and, you know, one day better than the next, better than the next. And, you know, that's great. But your body can only do so much for so long. You know, I remember, you know, back in college taking a business course saying, you know, you want to set your productivity goals at an attainable rate that someone can do over the course of time, and you want them to be able to do it. But then you set your reward goals just that much higher so that then they attain those, because you want people working, but you don't want to burn them out. And as I'm listening to this story about these temp workers, man, this is not a life for anybody. And what the carrot that they hold out there is, oh, well, if you work hard enough. And this is the Amazon tale. If you work hard enough, we may hire you on to come work with us at Amazon, and you could be one of our employees, not one of those temp employees. And you need to work harder, because remember that guy yesterday we walked out of here because he didn't do enough? Well, that could be you tomorrow. And don't say that you twisted your ankle or you hurt your back, because you'll never be seen again. That's the world that we live in. And you know, I was remembering one of the warehouse jobs that I had back years ago. You know, if it was a 110-degree day, you know, you did what you had to do, but it took you a little longer, and you made sure that you didn't fall out. But you know, having this conversation about the temp work mentality, I'm seeing things in a much different light. And having read that article in the Morning Call yesterday, much different light. Something absolutely has to be done with our labor law in this country to do something about these temp agencies who pull this stuff. Because, you know, as the person I was talking to said, look, if you get fired from like say, Amazon, that temp agency, they won't send you somewhere else. You're just done. Now you're out of any job. You're out of any opportunity to get anywhere else. So you don't want to screw up at one, or, you know, be thrown out of one place. And, you know, I always thought the temp agencies were kind of like, you know, when I was working out of the union hall. You know, you show up at 6 o'clock in the morning, they say, okay, they got work for you over there. Go spend the day at work there. And maybe this is what we need to go back to. Maybe we need to return to a time where labor controlled itself, where we didn't have a third party between labor and management who's then profitizing it. I mean, these temp agencies, they make huge money, and they're the biggest employers in the country, and it's extremely lucrative, because they're now you've got two people making their living off of one person working. I mean, isn't that amazing? I mean, shouldn't we be doing something? And as we talk to politicians, this is an issue that has got to be changed. This is something that has to be looked at, because it's getting worse and worse. This whole idea of the independent contractor, this whole idea of a temp worker. What protections do you have? Because you know, these kids over there, if they organized into a union, they just fire them all, bring in a whole other temp agency. Same thing with the Amazon people. If they organized, it's the reason you put a third-party logistic company in. That's the reason you put a third party in there, so that you can just go, oh, sorry, you're going. Much like the people out in California that we've talked to at the BMW plant. Same thing. They want to get rid of all of their workers, bring in a third-party company to then take over that work, so that in the future, if they do any of that union stuff, they just fire that company and bring in another one and do the same thing over and over and over again. So at some point, labor is going to have to figure out, and that means every working person, not organized labor, your labor, you working people are going to have to figure out how to come together in one form or another. Because the only way you can fight back against stuff like this, I mean, they took, I think the story said, 15 people out on stretchers in one day because of the heat exhaustion. That to me is just mind-blowing. Anyway, I'd like to know what you think. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bill Scheer, Campaign for America's Future. Back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Thursday, President Obama, supported by labor and progressive groups coast to coast, pushed again for passage of his American Jobs Act and its $50 billion investment in repairing the nation's crumbling infrastructure. Unions and progressive groups rallied at bridges needing repair in at least 11 major cities. A new report from the Public Interest Research Group says 69,000 structurally deficient bridges are in urgent need of repair to make them safe. Lauren Wiener is with the progressive group United for Change.
We need to make sure that they're safe to drive on, and we need to make sure that we're putting Americans back to work, and we think this is a great way to do that.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined tens of thousands of California nurses and healthcare workers on picket lines Thursday at Kaiser Permanente. Their one-day strike protested moves by Kaiser and by Sutter Hospitals to cut health benefits, pensions, and patient services. Deanne McEwen is co-president of the California Nurses Association.
We're standing in solidarity with other workers on behalf of the patients in our community because these healthcare corporations, they're proposing vicious cuts to nurses' retirement security, healthcare coverage, and really encumbering our ability to make professional practice decisions that help keep our patients safe.
Striking Tacoma Washington Education Association teachers are expected back in their classrooms today after reaching a contract agreement that ended their strike. About 1,900 teachers went on strike September 13th over staffing issues, class sizes, and pay cuts. The striking teachers defied a court's back-to-work order and remained on the picket lines until a negotiated settlement was reached. President Obama's health care reform has made sure that 1 million uninsured young adults are now covered. Jesse Russell reports.
The Affordable Health Care for America Act is starting to see some measurable statistics. One of the most noticeable, and the one President Barack Obama will likely hang his hat on while seeking younger voters, is allowing young adults to stay on their parents' health plans until they turn 26. That piece of the legislation forced equality in how plans treated young adults, company by company, and state by state. The number of uninsured young adults between the ages of 19 and 25 declined by nearly 1 million in 3 months. While some Republican presidential candidates have been running on the message, repeal the whole bill, most Beltway insiders see that move as unlikely, as it would be unpopular to suddenly yank health care out from under the feet of these young adults. On Tuesday, Obama announced $109 million in grants would be split up between 29 states to assist in health insurer oversight. The grants are in tandem with new rules enacted under the Health Care Act requiring insurers to declare publicly the reasons for any premium increases above 10%.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the OPEIU and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast. If you got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. You can take the program on the go with you. So Mitt Romney was on the stump talking about taxes, talking about the middle class, talking about, you know, what he would do.
Is that we ought to provide help to the people who've been hurt most by the Obama economy. And that's the middle class.
Yep.
It's not those at the very low end. It's not certainly not those at the very high end. It's for the great middle class, the 80 to 90% of us in this country.
80%
and
us.
And what I would do specifically is this. I would say that everybody who is earning $200,000 a year and less should be able to save their money however they want to and not pay taxes on it, meaning no tax on interest, dividends, or capital gains for middle-income Americans.
No interest. That's pretty amazing. The 80 to 90% of us. I love how he throws himself into us. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't he make his money the old-fashioned way? By firing thousands of us and closing down companies that weren't as profitable as he would have liked them, that threw people like us out of work. Mitzi, our man of the people, he's worth about $250 million. I don't consider that middle class, not by a long shot. But in his view, all of us are up nights. We're sitting up nights worrying how we're going to, we in the great middle class earning up to 200 grand a year, how we're going to spend that money that we save on interest, dividends, and capital gains. The number I've seen, about 70 bucks a year. So that 70 bucks, I'm gonna spend my windfall. Insane. Anyway, I've got Bill Scheer on the phone from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. He's written a piece over there judging the Republican debate with his handy Bushometer. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for me.
Great to be on. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, I look at Mitt Romney, evidently one of us, Bill.
I would like to be one of him. It seems like a sweet deal.
Yeah, I mean, I sit up nights worrying about how I'm going to pay my tax bill on all of the interest that my bank account is making, about 0.75%, and all of those dividends I'm reaping in and all of that capital gains that I'm just swamped with. I just don't know. I don't know how I'm going to pay it.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, part of Romney's deal is it's sort of a wink-wink, where he basically, you know, the subtext of it is, we all know I have no actual convictions or principles or anything. You know, I can say anything at any day, whatever's going to behoove me politically for the moment. You know that, I know that, but you don't expect very much from your politicians. So as long as I'm the other guy, if you're mad about the economy, vote for me.
Yeah.
I don't think he even expects people to think he's really middle class. It's just part of it's almost a postmodern performance art piece at this point, I think.
Yeah, I asked the question the other night, you know, if he's one of us. You know, I wonder how much the outfit he was wearing the other night cost, and if the cost of that outfit was equal to my entire wardrobe.
Well, he has been dressing down lately, going a little more business casual.
Yeah, well, you know, even his casual, to be honest, is still probably worth more than my my entire wardrobe. So I asked the question, you know, you wrote this great piece. How did they do? How did the Republicans square up on the Bushometer?
You know, they all scored perfect tens from my reading, except for Michelle Bachmann, who I gave a special score of a million. Since she literally repeated Bush's comments about taxes, it's not the government's money, it's the people's money, which was his phony justification for giving away more tax breaks to the wealthy. But, you know, all of their basic policy positions when it comes to the economy are just, you know, regurgitated boilerplate from the Bush years. Let's cut taxes on the job creators, a.k.a. wealthy in the corporation. Let's cut regulations so businesses can run roughshod on the public. The same types of reckless behavior that created the entire financial crisis that put us in the mess we're in today. There's not even the slightest attempt to say, we did something wrong before and we learned a lesson and now we're going to do things differently.
Yeah, no lesson. No lesson there at all. In fact, you know, it just doubled down on the same bad policy, or actually in this case, tripled down on the same bad policies because it's the same thing that came from the Reagan years.
And their bet is that people will be mad enough at Obama by 2012 at the economy that people won't, you know, think the next step or consider the next part of the story. And you know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes people get so mad at the guy in charge that you vote for the other person and you don't care. Okay, let's give the other guy a shot. But one of the things that has surprised me in the polling, for a very long time is that when the question is asked, who do you blame for the economy, Bush or Obama? People still say Bush. I mean, we're 3 years in. Usually people start shifting their blame to the guy currently there. And Obama's showing his level of blame is going up, no doubt. But when you put the two side by side, people still say Bush. People do remember. And if the Republicans want to pretend that they don't remember, I think that's a big risk on their part.
Now, I agree. And the reality is, and you're absolutely right. At this point in his presidency, most people have forgotten who the last guy was and they just fall back on George Washington. But again, you know, you're right, spot on, that this is Bush's baby. But what have we changed? I mean, what policies are they proposing that are going to take us in a different direction? And the answer is none.
They're not even trying. They're not even making an attempt. They have no capacity to challenge the people in their own party. I mean, Democrats went through a pretty painful process after getting beat a lot in the 80s. And they say, okay, we got to do something different here. And there are so many things about what has been different that, you know, I don't like and probably you don't like. But there at least was some attempt to say, okay, this is not working. Let's try to see if we can go with something else that the people might believe in. And the fact that there was some evidence of fresh thinking was useful for Democrats getting another chance. And Republicans might have to keep losing some more before they hit that rock bottom point and they go to their Tea Party base and say, you know what, if we just follow you wherever you want to take us, we're going to go off the edge forevermore.
Yeah, and it appears that to be the case. I mean, you look at this, what's going on right now, another hostage situation, another potential 11th-hour government shutdown that, you know, a handful of people are really perpetrating on the extreme right. And you know, I keep going, you know, at how many times can you go to this well?
Well, that stuff, you know, their hope there, and it's not necessarily Speaker Boehner's hope or Mitch McConnell's hope, but some of the Tea Party folks in the rank and file, you know, their hope there is, as long as we go up the works, people are going to blame Obama. They won't know that it's us. They won't pay attention that it's us. You know, us gremlins in the cogs that are slowing things down. They'll just blame the guy at the top. And it works that way sometimes. It's totally cynical and crass and awful for the country, awful for the people who are unemployed, awful for those who are underpaid. But politically speaking, sometimes people don't look under the hood when people are mad at the guy at the top. But since Obama has been pushing this American Jobs Act, has been out on the stump a lot more, has been sort of less bogged down in the legislative wheeling and dealing, that might be harder today than it was a month ago. If people are rallying to Obama's side or saying, at least there's one guy out there who is saying, let's put aside the politics, do something about jobs, and has a plan to do it, you haven't given me a good reason why we shouldn't just do that. Why are you trying to create another government shutdown? It's just going to hurt the economy.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. Their website, ourfuture.org. We've got a link there at thericksmithshow.com. Are you encouraged by what you're seeing out of Obama right now? This kind of, you know, I got to be honest, over the last couple of years, I didn't think he had this kind of spine in him that I've seen in the last several weeks.
Well, you know, certainly a lot of folks who have been, you know, upset with Obama, that he has not, you know, tried this legislative strategy, you know, sort of taking to the people strategy, I think have been hardened. And I think he reached a breaking point where, he had to make very clear where he stood on jobs and force Republicans to put up or shut up. But as good as I think that is politically for him, it's not necessarily going to make it so that the bill actually passes, and I'm not blaming Obama for this. I do think it's understandable on Obama's end that if you're trying to actually get something passed, something actually happens to the economy, and maybe even if it's not the bestest, perfectest thing that you want in the world, but you can't always go for the perfect when people are hurting, and you just got to get something into the pipeline. I can understand why he took the tax that he did just to see what he could get done. But now that well is dry, it seems. He can't go back there anymore. He has squeezed whatever minimum bits of stimulus he can get into the system that the House Republicans will let him do, and all that's left is to take it to the people,
right,
and to put that extra pressure on Republicans. And maybe, just maybe, there's enough public outcry there that you can pick a few off. And the other possibility is that if the super committee actually forges a deal and there's lots of things that, you know, potential poison pills that may be involved with that, And I wouldn't say that's sort of a high probability expectation that they would come to a deal. But if they did, you could, in theory, actually tack a jobs bill onto that, too. And that's maybe the only legislative train that could leave the station. And that may only happen if there is a real public outcry on Republicans saying, you're the ones who are going to pay the political price if you don't find a way to do that deal and do something about jobs at the same time.
Yeah, I see that as well. Something's going to come out of this super committee? Because there's part of me that thinks it's not possible. And then there's another part of me that says, you know, Max Baucus will probably surrender.
Well, you know, if you want to put your money on nothing happening, that's probably a good bet.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough deal to do. And Lord knows, where Obama drew the line in his speech on Monday was, I will veto anything that, has cuts for the middle class in this country, cuts Medicare, and I will veto anything that has it if it does not also raise taxes on the wealthy. So Obama's essentially in the same position that he's always been. He wants this grand bargain. He wants to do both. And I don't think there's any chance that he or the Democrats would cave on that point, that they would do just what the Republicans want and not raise taxes on the wealthy at the same time. So you think
there's something that the Democrats will not cave on?
I think that on that point, I think at this point you're either doing those things together or you're not doing them at all. Now doing them together is not necessarily the most reassuring thing in the world, because people might not like the kind of cuts that might happen in Medicare that go along with that.
Right.
So I'm not trying to sugarcoat it, but I don't think they would do the stuff on retirement security without doing the stuff raising tax on the wealthy at the same time. And the only way that that's going to happen, because that's the deal that Obama put to Boehner, over the summer, that Republicans in the House would not accept. So what could change with the super committee? The only thing that could change is they have this trigger mechanism that says if you don't do a deal, there are automatic cuts that are very, very deep in the military and in the healthcare industry. And that means that the military lobby and the healthcare lobby may start putting some pressure on their Republican friends and saying, wait a second now, I know you don't want to raise taxes. I know you're all in the pocket of Grover Norquist, but we fund your campaigns. So maybe you got to think twice about this deal. That's the only thing that's different right now that could make a deal happen, and you could tag a jobs bill onto that, but there might be a heavy price that goes along with that in terms of Medicare, maybe even Social Security. So it's not a rosy picture that I'm painting, but I do think that's a legislative possibility.
Yeah, and going back to your piece, not to change the subject, but going, talking about Social Security and Medicare, you talked about Herman Cain's Chilean model. And I don't think anybody, I shouldn't say anybody, I think only a handful of people really understand what the Chilean model is. It's privatization.
It's that's all it is. It's just, gutting the basic concept of Social Security, of having a public insurance program that's a fail-safe regardless of what happens in the economy, and telling folks you have to take a chunk out of it, put it in the stock market, roll the dice. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. If you retired in 2008 under what Bush wanted to do, what Herman Cain wanted to do, and what Mitt Romney wants to do, and what Rick Perry wants to do, you would be out of luck. That nest egg would be gone. And that's why you don't see them talking about it in those. They don't promise you great investment returns from Wall Street right now, because they know no one would buy that. But it's the same thing that they've always been talking about. Now, I don't think that would happen in the super committee, because that's not something the Democrats were going to accept. The thing that gets talked about more are adjustments to cost of living in conjunction with some adjustment of the payroll tax cap, so the wealthy have to pay more on their income, but the adjustment of benefits for the cost of living would fall more on the middle class, and that's where it gets very politically sensitive.
Right. But the Chilean model, I don't think, and help me if I'm wrong here, but, wasn't that like an IMF dictate by a dictator who owed a bunch of money?
Oh, you may know more than me there. I wasn't personally aware of that. You may be right, but I just know that it's a basic conservative concept. It's not a real Social Security program. It's putting people's money into the stock market and not having any guarantee of benefits. And it's like the American public has rejected time and time again. So all the Republicans keep doing is trying to come up with new labels to put on it so they don't know what it is that they're talking about. Now Keynes trying to bring Chilean model into the picture when we all know it's the same, it's the same Wall Street gamble.
Now, last question I've got for you. You know, as we move down the road towards, I guess Monday, they're supposed to be meeting again with this latest hostage situation. Do you think there's a deal going to be had, or do you think the House is going to run off for the week and we end up, you know, in real trouble?
I'm a little more hopeful here. I mean, what the differences between the House and the Senate right now are much, much smaller than what we're talking about in the summer. I mean, they're basically, you know, Republicans are being ridiculous about disaster relief. And
which I see as a political loser. I mean, when, you know, when you've got people like here in central Pennsylvania who were, their possessions just flooded away, their homes are, you know, just now finally drying out, and they're, you know, trying to get life back to normal, to then have this charade go on, this dog and pony show go on, to try and not make sure the money's there, I just think it's a political loser for the Republicans.
Yeah, and I don't think Boehner and McConnell really want to fall on that sword. I mean, they have been trying very hard to say, look, we just went through this, we did this deal, we don't need to revisit it. I don't think it's where they're at. They just have caucuses that don't listen to the leaderships,
yeah,
who have different attitudes about these things. So that's what's trying to be reconciled here. But with the debt deal in the summer, there were a myriad of things that they were trying to hash their way through. This is just one or two things, small amounts of money in the bigger scheme of things. It should not be hard to come with a relatively non-ridiculous compromise. So I don't think we're necessarily going down into a dark alley here. But again, it only takes a handful of Republicans to not listen to their leadership and you know, smash the table. And so that could happen. So I don't want to be completely naive about it, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as what happened in the summer.
Yeah, that's why we play the game, I guess. Bill Scheer, I appreciate the time. Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. So do you think they're going to shut it down? Back after this.
Money, money, all around. Keep the gun before it tracks you down. Now, acting a crime, singing a song. Hungry jungle hunters with one on bandit eyes. Another nation's army retreats to hide and fly. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You know what's wrong with the American economy, bucko? You, that's what. Yeah, it's true that the reckless global gambling schemes of Wall Street bankers are what wrecked our economy. And yes, Congress and the Federal Reserve have used trillions of our public dollars to bail out miscreant bankers, while ignoring the plight of people like you whose jobs, businesses, homes, and middle-class incomes have been devastated by banker greed. And sure, it's also true that corporations are hoarding $2 trillion in cash and getting billions of dollars a year in subsidies from taxpayers like you, yet refusing to hire Americans or to make job-creating investments in our country. But blah, 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 bucko. This does not excuse your refusal to do your duty as an American consumer. CEOs say that they won't start hiring until you consumer slugs get out there and spend, spend, spend. And don't use the whiny excuse that you're out of work or mired in debt. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says that he has looked at macroeconomic statistics and concluded that you're being irrationally negative about the health of our economy. Households seem exceptionally cautious, declared the perplexed Fed Chairman recently, suggesting that your lack of confidence in the economy is a psychosis that's fueling a larger depression. Yes, chimed in another Federal Reserve banker, it's hard to have a robust recovery when Americans are so dispirited. So hey, perk up, America! Stop waiting on Wall Street, Washington, and corporate chieftains to do something. Forget economic reality. Just pull out your credit cards, put on a smile, and march to the mall. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow. I can't tell you how much more confidence I have in the future health of our economy, knowing that America's corporate and political leaders are so insightful and so in touch. How about you?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Mitt Romney, one of us, really? I mean, this clip just...
Is that we ought to provide help to the people who've been hurt most by the Obama economy. And that's the middle class.
Yes.
It's not those at the very low end. It's certainly not those at the very high end. It's for the great middle class, the 80 to 90% of us.
The 80 to 90% of us.
And
tell us what you do, Mitt.
Specifically is this. I would say that everybody who is earning $200,000 a year and less should be able to save their money.
Yes.
However they want to.
However they want.
And not pay taxes on it.
No taxes.
No tax on interest, dividends, or capital gains for middle-income Americans.
Wait a second. Interest, dividends, capital gains, but I don't have any of that. I mean, the study that I've seen said I would save $70, and I got to wonder how he would spend his $70, because after all, Mitzi tells us he's one of us, just one of the guys, you know, with his, you know, his $20 jeans and those old boots and, you know, the interest, capital gains, and dividends. My tax burden is payroll tax, income tax, property tax, sales tax. Well, that's my burden. See, in his world, interest, capital gains, dividends, that's how he's taxed. That's what matters to him. But remember, he's one of us. One of us. So, Michelle Bachmann, not to be outdone, she comes out and says, you know what? You need to be able to keep all the money that you earn. You earned every dollar. You should be able to keep every dollar you've earned. That's your money, not the government's money. So basically, she's saying eliminating all taxes. Do away with it all. And maybe we could do like they do in church, where we just, you know, pass a plate and hope that someone donates. Maybe that's the goal. We make government so poor and we make investment in our future absolutely impossible that everywhere we go, we pay. And I was thinking about this today as, you know, I was walking across the street. Across the street, put some money in the toll box. Drive my car to work, have one of those little neat little easy passes on the dashboard. Every time I go over a bridge or through a red light or, you know, a stop sign, it cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. So I pay more and more and more. Doesn't that sound like a great idea?
Not really.
So I have a new Obama battle cry. Everyone loves to say, oh, you know, Ronald Reagan brought down the Soviet Union by saying, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. I say Obama should say, Mr. Boehner, rebuild this bridge. Not the same kind of you know, passion, but, you know, right there, an idea. Maybe how we restart the American economy, rebuilding things. It's easy to tear stuff down. Republicans have been tearing it down for years. Have been doing a masterful job of destroying the economy, of destroying the nation, tearing apart our infrastructure, destroying education, you name it. They have figured out a way of starving it and destroying it. And the things that they haven't starved and destroyed, they've privatized and profitized. So, again, you know, I go back to this. Any idiot can swing a hammer. It's the guy who knows how to swing a hammer and actually build something that matters. I can tear down a house. It's a lot harder to build it. And what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a Republican Party who's hell-bent on tearing down the house. So the House passes this bad bill. You know, they say, oh, well, you know, we're going to pass this $3.7 billion disaster aid bill, but we're going to cut $1.6 trillion from energy programs. So it goes over to the Senate. The Senate says, not happening. Not happened once whatsoever. Reid says this is not an honest effort at compromise, and it will be rejected by the Senate. So basically, it was what happened. Now you've got this situation where here we are. The Republicans rolled the dice, thought they were going to be able to ram this through, thought they were going to be able to jam the Democrats up and say, wow, you know, you don't have much choice. You want to go home for the weekend? You want to go home for the recess? Well, you'll pass it. Well, to the Democrats, you know, I got to be honest, to their goodwill, to their courage, they said no. They said, we've had enough of this. This is ridiculous. And maybe at some point, you know, like Dick Durbin said, we're fed up with this. Maybe at some point you get a spine. You know, like Durbin said, this brinksmanship stuff, we're sick of it. Taking the government right to the edge and looking over, you can only do that so many times before the ledge crumbles and you fall. And maybe this is what's going to have to happen. Maybe you need to have some people who are going to have a steely spine. Just maybe. So on the other side of this, another bill that passed through, the Senate passed legislation for the trade adjustment, the TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance. In fact, it passed the Senate 70-27. Pretty overwhelming, considering the Republicans were dead set against putting any trade adjustment assistance into the trade agreements. Now, look, we're still going to be probably saddled with these really bad trade agreements with Colombia, South Korea, and Panama. So the Senate passes it. Now the House, they're saying, well, if you want us to pass this trade adjustment assistance, you have to put forth the trade agreements. Basically playing this, no, you first. I mean, it's kind of childish. But I guess you would expect nothing less from our Republican friends. And look, you know, at the end of this, why can't you just say, you know what, we're going to pass the trade agreements. I'm against them, but they're going to pass anyway. But we're going to make sure anyone affected by them is helped. Doesn't it make some sense on some rational level? Evidently not to our Republican friends. And to me, it's just another one of those. Where do you stand? Where are your values? Where are your morals? Where's your sense of community and commitment to your neighbors? Pretty simple stuff, man. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Precious, and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times, but without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. I really hope Herman Cain doesn't drop out. He's the comic relief, if you will. You know, he's the guy.
I would bring a sense of humor to the White House because America is too uptight.
I think he would bring a sense of humor. He'd probably crash the economy into the side of a mountain, but he'd do it with a smile on his face. I love Herman Cain. Maybe a VP pick. That'd be something. You know, give him a job in a cabinet or something. We'll think of something. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this. Pete DeCourcy, one of the Capitol Bureau people over here, wrote an interesting article talking about Pileggi's plan to rig the election here in the state of Pennsylvania. And he was talking about this group called All Votes Matter and how they've got a budget of $300,000 this year to pay for lobbying and communications to pass through this big rig, this scheme that Pileggi and Corbett have come up with, since their ideas, their policies, their values can't win the state of Pennsylvania, they need to cheat. So this cheat, evidently they got $300,000 to push through. And, you know, I look at this and I start thinking about all the money that's out there. Now, we, according to the article, are not allowed to know who's funding this. Because the guy that they were talking to, this Charlie Giroux, he's a lobbyist with one of these big law firms, Quantum Communications. He said, look, you know, we don't have to do it. State law. State law says we don't have to tell you who gives us all this money. So my thought is maybe we need a law. Maybe we should be thinking about these groups who are pushing, like, All Votes Matter. Maybe this front group, we should know where the money's coming from, and on all sides of things. Because, you know, you look at this rigging scheme. I mean, this is a massive overreach. And I'm hoping people see it for what it actually is. This theft of our democracy, the attack on the central principle of our democracy, that one vote, one person, that matters. This big rig scheme is about undermining the will of the people. It's shameless election rigging. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. And you look at what's going on here, this massive power grab explains why I'm against overwhelming one-party rule. But again, you know, if they can't win fair and square, they have to cheat. And that's kind of where we're going with all this. You can't do it the right way. Let's cheat. My ideas aren't the best. Let's cheat. You know, the people are upset that the policies that I've put forward, gotta cheat. Can't do it the right way. Gotta cheat. 224 years of history here in the state. Hasn't worked for us. Got to cheat. And I like what one of the Republicans said. He goes, look, you know, at some point the shoe may be on the other foot, which is why he's not in favor of it. And there are some. And I'm hoping that this dies the fiery death that it deserves after they throw the $300,000 away. But I look at all that money, $300,000, to push a really, really bad idea, and we don't get to know who's behind it. We don't get to know who's funding these these schemes, much like the school voucher thing. Think of all the money that's in destroying public education. Every time I turn the radio on, I'm hearing an ad for you know, one scheme or another to privatize, voucherize, or basically destroy my local public school. And I go, where's that money coming from? If we've got all these millions and millions of dollars to tell me why my local school's no good and I should have PA Cyber or K-12.org or, oh, I need vouchers. If there's all this money for that, why isn't there money to make my local school the best it can be? There's all this money to tell me why we should be privatizing the wine and spirit shops, why we should be giving away a state asset. And understand, House Bill 11 is coming up. It's going to be one of the first things that run here in the next couple of weeks. Because they want to steal that asset away from us and hand it over to the profiteers. Why? It means more campaign cash. You know, they want to privatize our prisons. And look in Georgia, they privatized the executions. And we've got all these people in jail. And I just happened to look at the FBI's annual crime report. There were 1.6 million drug arrests last year. 1.6 million drug arrests. 82% of those people arrested, 82% of them, were for possession only. And of those people charged with possession only, 88% of those were charged with having marijuana. Possession only. So you're talking 750,000 people. 750,000 people arrested for just having pot. And some of those people went to jail and went to for-profit jails. And how did we get there? Well, we got there by having a whole bunch of people lobbying in favor of privatizing and making sentences that much harsher. It's one of those things that just makes you scratch your head. But there's all this money out there. There's tons of money to destroy our government. There's tons of money out there to privatize what is ours. There's tons of money to tell us why we don't need public education. There's tons of money out there telling us, oh, we should privatize our transportation. And these public-private partnerships, this is the way to go. These P3s, oh, this is wonderful stuff. Because you, the taxpayers, you're not going to have to pay for your roads and bridges. I don't know if you've looked at some of the bridges we drive over. Scares me. Scares me an awful lot. Used to scare me a lot more when I was driving a truck for a living. I remember sitting on the George Washington Bridge, hundreds of feet above the river, sitting there for hours, looking down, going, that's a long way down. And sitting in this truck, that's a really long way down. And you look at all of this stuff, all of our crumbling infrastructure. Have you driven to New York, Jake? Have you been through there?
Oh, yeah.
It's a nightmare.
I know it well. I've got lost a couple of times going up there to sports events, and you're exactly right. You make one wrong turn, you're going to lose a lot of time. You're exactly right.
Well, I mean, not just the time, not just the getting lost, the actual physical structure, the actual physical breakdown of the structures. I mean, potholes, you can put somebody in. And, you know, Pennsylvania, the truck driving magazines always rate Pennsylvania as one of the worst states in the country to drive through because our roads are pretty bad.
Well, no.
78 used to be horrible.
Not only that, it's one of the most heavily used highways. I have a report later on in the show that we have four or five of the top 100 most heavily used highways in the country right here. In fact, several of them are in the top 10. Pennsylvania is, if you think about it, they call it the Keystone State for one reason. It's, you know, there's a lot of highways that extend south, north, east, and west. Very, very heavily used.
I mean, you look at the I-81 corridor. I mean, it goes right into the Texas, the I-69 corridor down in Texas, what they were calling the NAFTA superhighway before they put a stop to that. They're not stupid. They understand how this all works. But for me, you know, the investment hasn't been there, but the money to take it away from us has. You know, and it's right down the list. Take it down. You know, your roads, your bridges, your education system, any asset that is ours, Someone wants to privatize because they want to make a profit from it. What used to be part of we the people, what used to be part of something that we all used, someone now wants to make a buck off of. We used to invest in, hey, we need a road. We need a road to get from home to work. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. When we come back, we're going to talk with State Representative Joe Markosik about just this and a couple other things. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Thursday, President Obama, supported by labor and progressive groups coast to coast, pushed again for passage of his American Jobs Act and its $50 billion investment in repairing the nation's crumbling infrastructure. Unions and progressive groups rallied at bridges needing repair in at least 11 major cities. A new report from the Public Interest Research Group says 69,000 structurally deficient bridges are in urgent need of repair to make them safe. Lauren Wiener is with the progressive group United for Change.
We need to make sure that they're safe to drive on, and we need to make sure that we're putting Americans back to work, and we think this is a great way to do that.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined tens of thousands of California nurses and healthcare workers on picket lines Thursday at Kaiser Permanente. Their one-day strike protested moves by Kaiser and by Sutter Hospitals to cut health benefits, pensions, and patient services. Deanne McEwen is co-president of the California Nurses Association.
We're standing in solidarity with other workers on behalf of the patients in our community because these healthcare corporations, they're proposing vicious cuts to nurses' retirement security, healthcare coverage, and really encumbering our ability to make professional practice decisions that help keep our patients safe.
Striking Tacoma Washington Education Association teachers are expected back in their classrooms today after reaching a contract agreement that ended their strike. About 1,900 teachers went on strike September 13th over staffing issues, class sizes, and pay cuts. The striking teachers defied a court's back-to-work order and remained on the picket lines until a negotiated settlement was reached. President Obama's health care reform has made sure that 1 million uninsured young adults are now covered. Jesse Russell reports.
The Affordable Health Care for America Act is starting to see some measurable statistics. One of the most noticeable, and the one President Barack Obama will likely hang his hat on while seeking younger voters, is allowing young adults to stay on their parents' health plans until they turn 26. That piece of the legislation forced equality in how plans treated young adults, company by company, and state by state. The number of uninsured young adults between the ages of 19 and 25 declined by nearly 1 million in 3 months. While some Republican presidential candidates have been running on the message, repeal the whole bill, most Beltway insiders see that move as unlikely, as it would be unpopular to suddenly yank health care out from under the feet of these young adults. On Tuesday, Obama announced $109 million in grants would be split up between 29 states to assist in health insurer oversight. The grants are in tandem with new rules enacted under the Health Care Act requiring insurers to declare publicly the reasons for any premium increases above 10%.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the OPEIU and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of our program, there's the podcast there on the website. You can even watch the video, the streaming video. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And you look at what's going on here. The culmination of more than 30 years of anti-tax crusading by the big moneyed interests in this country who are now out to reap massive benefits from our failure to invest in our cities, our states, and really the entire nation, if you will. Governor Corbett was supposed to be working on a transportation bill. Haven't seen anything about it yet. He may be, maybe in his off hours. He's, in between figuring out how to rig the national elections. Maybe he's working on his transportation bill. Maybe trying to figure out how to rebuild the faltering infrastructure that we now have. And I gotta be honest, I can't imagine it's been all that easy. He's made a number of trips here and there, trying to sell his big rig election scam. Probably taking a good bit of his time. Maybe just a little bit. And, to be honest, you got to worry about Zogby's wife getting arrested again. You might lose your security detail. Who knows? But, the question I have is, how do we rebuild our roads and bridges? How do we do this with a Republican mantra of cut, gut, and punish? And I look at a tweet that I just got here a little bit ago from Representative Stephen Bloom, I guess my representative, saying just co-sponsored a bill requiring 100% of money from selling PLCB, the liquor store, to be used for roads and bridges construction. One, the money that you would get from selling the wine and spirit shops, nobody can agree on. The $2 billion number that the turd's eyes of the world threw out there, not happening. Even they admit it's not happening. The numbers don't add up in any way, shape, or form. They're talking about adding more liquor stores, up to 1,250. So there's going to be more opportunity. And to me, by having more of them, you lessen the value of them. And you will see a lower number for each one of those. Even if you've got $1 million per license, you're still only talking $1.2 billion. Understand, here in the state of Pennsylvania, we have an annual shortfall. Annual, that means every year, of about $3.5 billion per year. Every year. That's just to keep up with where we need to be. That's just holding on. That's not fixing things for the future. That's not doing anything else but just hanging on. $3.5 billion. Now, let's say we did privatize all of the state wine and spirit shops, and you got $1 million apiece. That's $1.2 billion this year. That's 1 year. Where are you going to get the other $2.25 billion? Where's that coming from? You've got 5,200 structurally deficient bridges. 5,200 of them. How do you get into this position? Well, you get into it by having these politicians who, they ran on, I didn't raise your taxes. Didn't raise your taxes, Jake, but I also didn't invest in roads and bridges, and I also didn't put any money into the state pension fund, which now are both in crisis.
But, Rick, you miss a point here. They want to get elected.
I understand that. But, here's the thing. At some point, I'm hoping the electorate looks back and goes, wait a minute. Yeah, that was all fine, well, and good, but look what you've left us. Look what's here. So now they've created this grand crisis. And we're in crisis on a number of levels. And it's all been the disinvestment, the fact that we haven't had money to put into roads, bridges, education, infrastructure, whatever. We haven't, airports, we don't even want to talk about that. Public transportation, forget it. Now the answer is, sum it off. And the public transportation, I love the idea there. They're going to privatize the most profitable lines. This is the most beautiful part of this. They did this in Pittsburgh. Understand, they've already done this. They've privatized the most profitable line. And they raised the price of the most profitable line. And you know what happened? all the people from that profitable line that the public transportation system used to have was very profitable for them, that was now privatized, and this profit company, this for-profit company came in, all those people who said, screw it, I'm not paying that much more. I'll drive over to this station across town, and I'll get on the public transportation, and I'll take that in. And now they want to privatize that. I mean, it's really one of these things that just kind of makes you want to rip your hair out. But again, how did we get here? Well, we got here simply by people who absolutely don't believe in our government, who don't believe in we the people, don't believe in the investment that needs to be done, and wants to starve the beast.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You have just heard the voice of the most powerful man in Pennsylvania. Probably one of the most powerful people in the entire country. Him and his little pledge. His little well-funded, massively well-funded, his little think tank. One of the most powerful people in the country. Because he's got all these politicians by the short hairs saying, well, you signed my pledge. You cannot possibly raise taxes. Sorry. And what happens? Well, we don't have the money for education. Sorry, you're going to have to cut education. Going to cut 14,000 teachers to the street. Increase education. Then you get someone like Rick Scott who jumps for joy at the fact that he got rid of 15,000 state employees in Florida. And I'm sure our guy here, when they go to their little meetings, I got rid of 14,000 teachers. Never mind what's going to happen to those kids down the road. Never mind what's going to happen to them. Because, look, at the end of this, and this is where middle-income people better wake up, because you're the ones who are getting screwed in this whole deal. Poor people are always going to be poor. You can only kick them so much. They're used to being broke. When I was a kid, I got to be honest, didn't know I was poor and didn't realize that, you know, not having things in the cupboard to eat every so often wasn't normal. Didn't know any better. And poor people don't. The rich people, they're fine. Their school districts are going to be just fine. They're paying $20,000, $21,000 a student. They are fine. They're going to get the cream of the crop teaching-wise. Not to worry about them. So on the education front, you know, the rich districts doing very well. The poor districts, we're trying to help out. So we take money and we yeah, okay, a little help. It's the middle-income folks. They're the ones struggling. They're the ones where the big cuts happened. Because we're not taxing the very wealthy. And we think we can make a living off of screwing the people on the bottom. And I don't know when it happened. Was it in your lifetime, Jake? I mean, you're older than I am. When did it turn from looking ahead and saying, you know what? That's the guy pushing me backwards instead of looking behind you saying, here's who's pulling me down. I mean, I'm just not getting this.
Well, we've talked about this numerous times, I think, truthfully. I think it started in the 80s, but it certainly has been accelerated during the Bush administration. And then 2012, it was climactic. You know, the people who believe that less government is better, people who would like to destroy government, unfortunately got power and now are pushing their agenda. It's been the last 30 years. This is, it's been getting worse and worse and worse. And unfortunately, 2010, people didn't come out to vote.
Now, here's the thing.
Now we have the mess we have.
You know, here's the thing. There are a lot of things I don't think government should be doing. I don't want government making my shoes. I don't want them making my clothing. I don't want them building my house. You know, I don't want them involved in a lot of things. But there are certain things that only government, of, for, and by all of us, we collectively, there are certain things only we can do. And building roads and bridges and schools and hospitals, that should be the purview of us.
I think most people, Rick, simply want a government that's responsible, that's effective. That's what they want. Now, I understand that's a broad definition. But they don't want a government to disappear. They don't want to be at the whims of the corporate interest. They want a government that is effective, not in every facet of their life, but they certainly don't want what the right-wing extremist wants. They're in that middle, the great 40% in the middle.
Now, I want them accountable. You know, and I want people to go to jail when they screw up. I want scrutiny like you cannot imagine. Because I think people in elected positions, I think, to be honest, they need to be held to the highest, standard. It's just that simple to me. They should be held to the highest standard. And if they screw up, they should be hit with the biggest hammer.
If I could say one other thing, Rick, I think the definition of responsible government changes. During the Great Depression, what did we need? We needed massive government intervention. Is that what we need now? Not to that degree, but we need government now to intervene more than we did, say, 20 years ago or in the 60s and 70s. It depends on the time, and the problem with the right-wingers, their mantra is less government, less regulation, smaller taxes. Well, you know what? Reality is that times change because of all kinds of factors, wars, economic downturns. You have to have a flexible government, and they are not, and therein lies one of the great problems with the conservatives.
Yeah. But at the end of this, you know, they're the people who should be held to account. And, you know, what we've got, and every time you turn around, there's some scandal, there's something. And it's easy for the anti-government people to say, look, see, it's broken. And that's what frustrates me. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Don't know much about the science folk. Don't know much about the French actor. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You know what's wrong with the American economy, bucko? You, that's what. Yeah, it's true that the reckless global gambling schemes of Wall Street bankers are what wrecked our economy. And yes, Congress and the Federal Reserve have used trillions of our public dollars to bail out miscreant bankers, while ignoring the plight of people like you whose jobs, businesses, homes, and middle-class incomes have been devastated by banker greed. And sure, it's also true that corporations are hoarding $2 trillion in cash and getting billions of dollars a year in subsidies from taxpayers like you, yet refusing to hire Americans or to make job-creating investments in our country. But blah, 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 bucko. This does not excuse your refusal to do your duty as an American consumer. CEOs say that they won't start hiring until you consumer slugs get out there and spend, spend, spend. And don't use the whiny excuse that you're out of work or mired in debt. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says that he has looked at macroeconomic statistics and concluded that you're being irrationally negative about the health of our economy. Households seem exceptionally cautious, declared the perplexed Fed chairman recently, suggesting that your lack of confidence in the economy is a psychosis that's fueling a larger depression. Yes, chimed in another Federal Reserve banker, it's hard to have a robust recovery when Americans are so dispirited. So hey, perk up, America! Stop waiting on Wall Street, Washington, and corporate chieftains to do something. Forget economic reality. Just pull out your credit cards, put on a smile, and march to the mall. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, I can't tell you how much more confidence I have in the future health of our economy, knowing that America's corporate and political leaders are so insightful and so in touch. How about you?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, it's right there for your convenience and your enjoyment. Also, if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. You can take our program on the go with you. You know, this infrastructure thing, you know, the president's running around, and I think what he should be saying is, Mr. Boehner, rebuild this bridge. and the road and our airports and our broadband and the whole transportation infrastructure, a nice place to start. But here at home, we've got some problems right here in Pennsylvania. That's why I've asked State Representative Joe Markosik, chairman of the Committee on Appropriations, to come talk to us a little bit about what's going on in the way of transportation. Representative, thanks for taking time for me.
Yes, sir.
So a question I've got, you know, how bad's the infrastructure? I've seen, you know, as a former truck driver, truck drivers don't like Pennsylvania. Usually rated one of the worst states in the country. How bad is it?
Well, it's very, very bad, and it's been bad, and it gets worse, and everything gets a year older. PennDOT has more bridges under its jurisdiction than any other state highway agency does. It has more deficient bridges under its jurisdiction, about 6,000. That doesn't include bridges that are owned by counties and municipalities. They've probably got another two or three. There's got to be at least 10,000 deficient bridges, and then we can start talking about roads or rolling stock for transit or culverts. You name it, it's falling apart. Rail, ports, airports, all that stuff. And we haven't really addressed the funding or any additional new funding for this in at least almost 15 years now in the state.
You know, I look at the number, and I keep seeing this number flying around, an annual shortfall of $3.5 billion. And I look at a tweet one of your colleagues, Representative Stephen Bloom, just came out with, said proudly that he co-sponsored a bill requiring 100% of the money from the sale of liquor stores to go to building roads and bridges. And I'm going, even if you sold it and got exactly what you wanted, $2 billion, which is a pipe dream, that's still not $3.5 billion annually.
Well, part of the problem we have is a lot of people running around making up excuses why they don't want to put up tough votes. Everybody wants transportation. There's no reason this shouldn't be unanimous for significant additional funding for transportation. The last time I looked, every legislative district had transportation items or projects or infrastructure in their district. So there's no reason why it shouldn't be unanimous. And what I think a lot of people are doing is they know it's a tough vote. They know that they've made, you know, certain pledges and all those kinds of things. And now they're making excuses. They're preordaining their vote. They're basically saying, well, you know, if we solve world hunger, I'll vote for it. But till that time, I'm not going to vote for it. And that's kind of what I think you're seeing happening here.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, look, I mean, a lot of politicians, and I'm not sure where you stand on this, but a lot of folks got elected saying we're not going to raise taxes, and they've been doing it for 30 years, which is why we haven't had investment in this country for 30 years. We've been living off the investment of, you know, the past generation.
Yeah, nobody likes taxes. Let's say that first. I mean, nobody, I don't know one legislator that is for taxes. But I think there's, you know, people that are reasonable and that, hey, we have to pay for infrastructure. We have to pay for the things that we use. We have a huge demand. You know, the same folks who are out there saying they don't want to pay for things, they're not saying they don't want the things. They all want them. But, you know, at some point in time, there has to be a reasonable, meeting of the minds relative to paying for the services and the infrastructure that we use.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like paying taxes either, like anybody else. But you know what else I don't like paying for? Having my shocks replaced and my car aligned all the time.
Right. And what people forget is, you know, there. For example, if you had to pay some small fee, for example, wouldn't that be better than having to buy two or three extra gallons of gasoline because the bridge in your neighborhood that you use every day to go to work has been shut down? And there's no indication of when it's going to be reopened. And you're going to have to make the long way around, the trip every day, maybe adding a great deal of time and distance to your trip, which will cost you a lot more money in the long run.
So let me ask you, how do we get to this? Because what I'm seeing coming out of the Republican side of this are these P3s, these public-private partnerships, where we're basically going to sell off portions of our transportation. I don't know that I'm thrilled with privatizing my roads and bridges, but how do you see us getting to that number?
Well, the governor's commission that he appointed, came up with a whole bunch of ways to get to that number. Now, any one by itself isn't going to get it. But, if you pick a whole bunch of those various options, you can get to that number or even more, certainly a number that would be sufficient. The problem is that they don't want to do anything. They don't want to do anything, and a couple of things they've even hinted at are things that really won't get you more than about 5 or 10% to where you need to be. So they're only stopgap. So if you really want to get this done, we have to, the governor, first of all, has to step forward. He's the leader. He ran to be governor so he could lead. It's up to him to lead. It's up to him to come out and say, hey, look, we need to raise all this money. We need to fix this infrastructure. Here's how we're going to do it, and I want everybody to stand with me. And I think at that point in time, you'll get members on both sides of the aisle that'll come forward because, like I said before, we all have transportation in our districts, and it behooves all of us to have it. It's good for the economy, and we certainly can't afford to let that infrastructure just crumble.
Yeah, I agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with State Representative Joe Markosik. I look at this, and, one of the things I was reading a little bit ago was the fact that right now the gas tax that we pay on every gallon, we're at the lowest per mile rate in the history of the gas tax. Is that something to look at? I mean, what kind of ideas are out there on how to maybe bring in some more revenue or change things a bit?
Well, that was one of the items on the governor's own commission. There's also various fees that, we've had. For example, our registration in Pennsylvania, the $36 that people pay on a passenger vehicle in Pennsylvania, one of the lowest in the country. I think the average is about $200 a year.
Wow.
Per car. And, of course, we're paying $36. So I think, is there room to raise that? I would suggest that there would be. And if you take that and some of these other items that are on the governor's commission report, you can get to the number. But some of those items are not popular.
Right.
If you want to lead, if you want to be governor, then lead. And right. I think what we're seeing here is somebody that has basically putting their finger up in the air, see which way the wind's blowing, and say, well, I'm going to make a pledge, because this seems to be what people want. And when I get in office, I'm going to determine that instead of leading and taking people perhaps where they might not want to go, but where they should go, which is, in my opinion, the job of a leader, I don't see that getting done.
Yeah. To me, I look at these things and the fee, I personally probably wouldn't mind a bump in the fee, because I think I could afford it. But I look at people who are struggling to make it now. I mean, poverty's on the rise. We're seeing, the minimum wage still falling behind. I look at folks who are struggling, and I look at these fees and I go, there's got to be a better way.
Well, whatever we do, it's not going to, there's a very good chance it's not going to be popular. I think the fairest thing to do is to use user fees, whether it has to do with fuel, whether it has to do with registration, licensing. We also have part of the governor's commission came up with other somewhat little more exotic ideas, such as red light cameras and speed cameras and these kinds of things that would, bring in more fines and whatnot. So, there's a whole host of items there, and really what we're lacking right now is the governor stepping forward and saying, look, here's the money we need, and here's the options I'm picking. The legislature can debate that then.
Yeah. I got to tell you,
until he steps to the plate, I think this issue is just going to go by the boards, and we just simply can't afford to have that happen.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the red light camera thing, not happy with that. I don't want cameras everywhere. See enough of that in New York.
There's going to be a lot of things that people are unhappy with, and you got to get to the number somehow.
Right.
We've had various reports that say we need as much as $3.5 billion. I think the governor's secretary of transportation, to his credit, has at least said that we need $2.5 billion new dollars each year, which is still a big, pretty big number. And he's appointed by the governor.
And that number is just to keep up with what we've got. That's not actually looking down the road and making improvements, because traffic in this area is going to get worse over the next 10 years as it has the last 10 years. That number isn't talking about improvement, proving infrastructure. It's just keeping what we've got. Is that right?
If we do nothing, we won't even keep what we've got.
No, the $2.5 billion.
We'll start shutting the current system down. What we're going to need, that $2.5 billion will not only maintain, but will rebuild and repair quite a bit of what's out there. It will add some capacity. You're not going to see huge amounts of capacity being built even with that $2.5 billion or $3 billion a year. But you'd have to go much higher to get a lot of new capacity. But if we do nothing, we have a very old, and I like to say a geriatric system. And it's just like people when they're geriatric. They require more tender, loving care. They require more health care. They require, and it's more expensive.
Yeah.
So it's something that, we can't let, in my opinion, we can't let go. This is where real leadership has to step forward. And, there's still some time, I think, for the governor to do that. But as of right now, he hasn't.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he's doing anything other than this big rig scheme that's going on. I wanted to get your opinion on this, and the way I'm looking at it is the Republican vision for this state, the Republican jobs plans, whatever you want to say, can't win this state. So there's got to be some scheme to steal it. That's all I can come up with of why you would try this rigging scheme that they're coming up with. I'm curious your thoughts on it.
You have to clarify
the electoral the electoral distribution of the electoral.
Oh yeah, no question. The electoral thing is just nothing more than suppressing votes, I think, and they want to do voter ID along with it, which is another way of doing that. Right. I mean, they're just resorting to political subterfuge now to try to change the system so that, they feel that their side has the advantage. And I think it's just wrong. And this is the kind of, this is all the kinds of things. Instead of doing what they should be doing and leading and taking us where we need to go as a state economically, they're coming up with all of these, exotic ideas about how to continue their own grasp of the power that they now have.
Yeah, because the way I see this is, there's no real vision for down the road. Not going to make my life much better, so we need a diversion, and that's what this is.
Right. Well, we've cut education. You talk about, vision and looking down the road. I mean, what more helps us down the road than education? We've cut that severely. Not just cutting back because, things are tight. It's a severe cut that we've experienced this year in education. We're not doing anything with transportation. We ought to be spending a lot more money with that. The governor talked about sentencing reform in our prisons to, bring down the number of people that we currently house in prisons, which, that has gone up exponentially in the last few years. To my knowledge, there's not a whole lot of effort or anything being done there. That's been productive. So there's all these things on the table that, in some ways, the current administration made a lot of claims about early on, but they just don't seem to be doing it right now.
Last question I've got for you. I know you're a busy guy. You got some things you got to get to, but this privatization issue has just got me going nuts. I mean, they want to privatize the state stores. They want to privatize portions of our public transportation, privatize, these P3s. Where does it stop? I mean, when does what used to be ours, we the peoples, when does it stop becoming something that they can profitize?
Well, I was opposed to leasing the turnpike a few years ago to a Spanish consortium, and I'm glad that we were able to defeat that because, we have valuable assets, the turnpike, the liquor stores, the LCB, the lottery. And, there's people talking in Harrisburg, about privatizing. And like you say, I think all that does is get you a one-time, money up front, a lump sum. And once that's gone, it's gone. And you've lost a very valuable, very profitable asset. And I think that's just very short-sighted, not the way to do business.
Yeah, just like our Tea Party representative Stephen Bloom said, I just signed on to make sure that that money goes a one-time shot to transportation, and probably can maybe get $1 billion at best for one shot. Representative, I appreciate the time. Would love to have you back on again at some point.
Sure. Okay, Rick.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, you've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, ya good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, now the good old union has come in here to clear. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
According to some new research out from the Carsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire, we've got kids in this country living in poverty. In fact, the number of children living in poverty in the U.S. has increased by 2.6 million since the recession began back in 2007. Now, they're now estimating this Carsey Institute that some 15.7 million children, live in poverty in 2010. They also estimate that one in four children under the age of 6 years old now live in poverty. And all I hear from my Republican friends is, gee, how do we cut those social programs? They point out that big cities and rural areas have the highest child poverty rates. Makes sense. 31% of children under the age of six in poverty in big cities, and 30% of young children in rural areas. Of course, the South has the highest child poverty rates, and the Northeast has the lowest. Mississippi led the way with 32.5% of their children living in poverty. Sad, sad stuff. Here to talk to us about what the great work that she's doing out in Pittsburgh is Tara Marks. She's co-director of the food bank out there called Just Harvest. Tara, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You know, I had the opportunity to talk to you today, and you know, the fact that you collect people's stories, that the folks that you help, to me, that is a brilliant idea to help get the message out to folks. And I'm going to pass it along to several of the food banks in this area. So I guess the first question I have is, how has that been working out in your area by doing this?
Well, so far, so good. We are talking to folks that we help with their application for food stamps. be clear that we're not a food bank. What we do is we help folks access food stamps and other programs, the federal safety net program, so we can help end hunger and poverty, because we believe that the government does have a role in ending both of those terrible things that, as you pointed out, all these children are living in. So what we've done is we've contacted folks who said they have been would be interested in sharing their story. And that's really important at Just Harvest, because I know firsthand, because that's what they asked me to do when they helped correct my situation when I was trying to access food stamps years ago. And once I was successful, after they told me what to do and how to apply, I said, you know, what can I do to help you guys, because you helped me? And they said, can you please tell your story? So I know firsthand how powerful this story can be. So we decided that we would contact folks and say, will you do this with us? And a lot of people are saying yes. They will just sit down. We have an intern who has come in from the School of Social Work in Pittsburgh, and he's going through and talking to folks and just asking simple questions, you know, like, what did you do before you got food stamps? How has this helped your life? You know, what are you guys up to now? You know, just these very simple conversations that we're having with folks and finding out that, guess what, a lot of people are using food stamps like we knew, but it's what it does to the quality of life to know that you can walk into a grocery store and you can get food to put on the table. That's just a wonderful program that we have, and we just want to make sure that those people's voices are heard, because as we know, the super committee and all these whatever committees, you know, any form of government wants to get together and decide to cut programs, we want to be able to battle back and say, no, hold up. You need to hear what people have to say, the everyday person that is living in poverty now, and what these programs do for them.
The majority of the people that you deal with, how did they get there? I mean, is there a consensus? Is there like a commonality between most of the folks in that you deal with, job loss, something along those lines?
It's a combination, and I don't have a lot of information in front of me, so I'm going to talk a little loose here with it, but I can tell you that we have folks that are underemployed, and meaning that at one time they had a job that required a skilled trade and they were making good money, and then that job was gone, or it was cutting of hours. That was some of the things that we've heard. Or let's just face it, there are a lot of low wage paying jobs, and these folks are just struggling along, trying really hard, and then realize one day, you know what, I just need some help. And they will turn to Just Harvest to help them with their application.
And it's a good thing that you're there. You know, I remember as a kid, there were times where my mother was out of work and had to go on what they called at the time ADC. And, it was no picnic at the time, and it was no great Taj Mahal living. But you have some folks who think that that if you get these things, that you're living high off the hog. And I've heard so many stories of, oh, well, I was behind somebody who was buying caviar and thick steaks and all of these stories. I'm sure you've heard them as well.
Yeah.
That's not reality, though.
No, that's far from reality. I mean, I can tell you, I know firsthand what it's like. As you pointed out, your mother was receiving help for her family at the time. And I've been in the same situation, where we now call it can of the temporary aid for needy families. And it was my son and I, and we were getting $316 a month. That's what we were getting, okay? I don't know what Taj Mahal is up for sale for less than that. So, it's really silly. And but you know what? Again, I've talked about this unjust smear campaign against poor people. I guess that, those rich people or the people who want to hold people down, they're going to, say these crazy stories. I hear them, too, and I get the phone calls. People will, swear up and down. There's all this waste, fraud, abuse, and blah, 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 blah. And I tell them, not to sound silly, but, there's a 1-800 number for that. Report that person.
Absolutely.
And, they never have a name. They never have a name. They never have a location. They just have this anecdotal story.
Yeah, and exactly. And I tell people the same thing. I got it on speed dial on my phone. Let's go get them.
Yeah.
Because I want people who are breaking the law to be in that little gray room with the bars in the front of it like any other criminal. Because I don't want to see these programs destroyed for people like me when I was a kid that needed them.
Absolutely. And that's, they've been wonderful. They've been proven to work. And, you know, at Just Harvest, we believe that food is a fundamental right. Who can argue with that?
Well, I know some people will. I know some people will. You know, I've had this conversation with people who say, well, you know, this country was founded on if you don't work, you don't eat. You know,
yeah.
good Horatio Alger vision.
Well, I can say this to you, Rick, that, you know, we believe, you know, for some reason in this country, it's been bought, sold, and distributed wide and far that it's okay and deemed acceptable to offer jobs that are low wage. And then until people want to change that, then we have to have, there's consequences to those types of jobs.
Yep.
And the consequences are we are going to have to supply people with programs that can be able to help put food on their table, keep their light bill, you know, keep their lights on, keep their heat going. You know, if we always have low paid paying jobs, there's always going to be some type of subsidy.
And
healthcare,
this is,
home, you know, food, all those things.
And this is where I talk about my commitment to the labor movement and to organized labor and to people joining and forming unions for better wages, hours, conditions. You know, I look at this Amazon situation, these people in temp jobs working in horrible conditions. You know, this is where collective bargaining and people coming together make things better for not only on work but also being able to feed your family.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. We believe that hunger is a product of poverty, and poverty is a lot of times a product of low wage. So the answer to all of this, good jobs, good wages, and good benefits.
So when I look at our politicians, someone like Pat Toomey, what kind of response do you get from a guy like that who, you know, somebody who's really firmly against, vehemently against organized labor, and I would have to assume not the best friend to groups like yours.
No. We've gone to his office. I've talked to his office in D.C., and I've talked to his office, and people from Just Harvest have gone to his office locally, and we get the same response, that their staff is very proud to say, hey, we believe everything should be on the table, and they brag that he includes the defense budget. Well, what am I supposed to do with that? You know, I believe that everything shouldn't be on the table, and we should provide a circle of protection around these safety net programs so that people don't fall further into poverty and actually go hungry. Does happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's something.
People in America go hungry.
That's something I wish we would have some Democrats. Have you ever thought about running for office? I wish there were some Democrats who had the stones to say exactly what you just said. There are some things, I'm sorry, we're just not going to destroy. There's an area where we're not going to go. And that is, you know, that safety net that keeps people from crashing into the pavement.
Well, it's our responsibility. Again, you know, I believe that, you know, we take care of all when we're down. We help people that to get themselves up where they need to be. And that's what's so beautiful. I you know, you said you ran into me today. I was here at SEIU, the Leadership Assembly. They were so nice to extend an invitation to Just Harvest to come here and be a part of this because we've been an ally in the fight for a fair economy. Because this fits right with what we believe. We believe that, you know, as corporate America, since they are deemed the people, I guess we can say people pay their fair share, then a lot of these other things will work themselves out. You know, we don't have to worry about budget cuts that are coming to education and to roads, you know, roads not getting fixed and bridges not being fixed. And then we don't have to worry about looking at a food stamp program. Seriously? Food stamps? I mean, why go after these programs when there's a perfectly good reason why these programs and these things are on the chopping block? It's because they won't go after the people, the corporations that need to pay their fair share and stop the corporate greed, so that the everyday American can live peacefully without worrying about, am my job going to be shipped out somewhere? Can I find a job? And the very basic thing is, can I put food on the table for my family?
Really? Have you thought about running for office?
You've been talking to my husband.
I mean, you know, really, I mean, I don't hear anybody really in the political realm talking about any of those things. Look, the reality is that you are spot on right. I mean, there are certain things we shouldn't be talking about, and taking food away from people should be one of them. We should be asking Mr. GE and Mr. Boeing to pay their taxes. We know GE, we've been paying them. You want to talk about welfare? That's the crime.
I always say, you know, I will, when they talk about the welfare queen, you know, well, I can tell you about the welfare queen, which is so great, is now she no longer just drives a Cadillac and has six kids, right? It is, I've heard Escalade. She's now moved up to an Escalade.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah, good for her. You know, she's figured out how to do this. But, you know, this infamous welfare queen that Ronald Reagan created, we've never been able to identify her and give her her crown. But what I can tell you is that we know where the welfare queens really are. It's called Exxon. It's called UPMC. It's called all these places that aren't paying their fair share.
Yep.
There's your welfare queen.
I'm glad to hear that.
If you want to have a pageant, I'll give them an award.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that the mythical welfare queen has moved up to an Escalade. More room to put all those other mythical characters, like the small family farmer who lost his farm because of the estate tax. You know, all those mythical characters.
Nothing to do with Purdue. Nothing to do with factory farming. It only had to do with the estate tax. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the frame, isn't it? Is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I could tell you that I know a lot of this firsthand. The reason why I speak so personally about it and so passionately about it is because, you know, I've told the stories before where I, you know, had to survive on food stamps and the wonderful, wonderful people at the food bank and the food pantries. But before I did that, Rick, I went hungry. I can tell you, a whole weekend of not eating while I was studying for exams so that my child could eat, because there was not enough food in the house for the both of us. And like most parents in the world that I know, I went without so my son could eat. Now, that whole weekend, it was an awful weekend for me. And, you know, I couldn't believe this is what my life had come to. Come Monday morning to take him to his daycare, I couldn't maneuver rush hour traffic because I was so lightheaded. I couldn't wait to get into daycare so that I could make sure that he had food. But you know what? Because that morning we ran out and I had to hurry up and get him to daycare so that he could eat. But you know what food he did eat all weekend? I had WIC. And he ate milk, eggs, and cheese. That's what he ate all weekend. So you know what? It wasn't ramen noodles and oodles and noodles and macaroni and cheese and all these really high processed foods and all this terrible stuff that we, you know, that I wish wasn't only available to poor people anymore because that's all they can afford.
Right.
But because of a wonderful program called WIC, at least my child had good nutritious food, even though I couldn't join him. And so I love these programs because I understand exactly what they're supposed to do.
And they do,
and I'll
absolutely
keep fighting for them.
And they do absolutely work. And it's amazing to me, you know, the party of family values, the party of morality, constantly want to cut that program, WIC. Hate that program, along with the commodity supplemental food program that Bush wanted to cut every single budget he proposed, which all it did was give one bag of groceries to a senior citizen once a month. And he wanted to cut that out. Amazing stuff. Again, the website, justharvest.org. If you can make a donation, please do. Tara Marks, I appreciate the time. And look, if you ever run for anything, you have a supporter here.
All right, I'll remember that. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a great night.
You take care.
Tara Marks, co-director of Just Harvest out there in Pittsburgh, justharvest.org. There's a link at thericksmithshow.com. Seriously, if you've got a couple of pennies to throw their way, a good place to do it. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, and talking to her, you know, kind of reminds me of my childhood. You know, the story that she told, I don't think any mother, honestly, I don't think any mother should ever have to tell. It's in this country, you know, I can understand Africa, Sudan, I can understand other places around the world. Not here, not in the richest nation on the planet, not in the richest nation in history, should a mother ever have to go between feeding herself and feeding her children. I mean, that to me, that's an incredibly powerful story. And some would say, well, it was just a weekend. I don't know if you've ever seen this woman. There's not much to her to begin with. She's very, very slight. I can't imagine.
Well, the problem, right, is those who advocate for the hungry. You know, they don't have the money, they don't have the resources to have a high-paid lobbyist. And in the end, all too often, those who have the money and the power get their way in Congress. But as a country, and here's where we lost our way, and I see it more and more and more, and this goes to the heart of the soul of this country. Is that really what we want, the richest country in the world, to have just unconscionable numbers of people going without food, especially children? I mean, don't we have any sense of decency anymore in this country? I mean, is that acceptable? And I think out of sight, out of mind seems to be the mantra for some of these politicians. They never talk about it. They don't seem to care about it. It's not an issue to them because they don't hear about it.
Well, I mean, at the end of this, look, nobody's hungry in this country anymore. We don't have hungry people anymore. We have people who are food insecure. It's like anything. If something is wrong, you just change the name. You divert it. You create a diversion. And, oh, we're food insecure. That sounds so much better than my children are hungry. And when I look at this woman, and you got to give her credit for, you know, her ability to stand up, fight back, and to really advocate for those who are, because she could, honestly, she could very easily say, you know what, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. And I've talked about this before. I could do it, too. I grew up in a housing project. I could easily say, you know what, I, through the fortitude of my belly and the moral fiber of my being, I have risen from the depths of poverty to this strong man that I am today. It's not true, though.
That's BS. Well, Rick, I think one thing that most people don't even realize, you know, the development of a child's ability to learn is early stages. And if you don't have adequate nutrition, you minimize that, you negate that, and how many people have we written off simply because they were poor? And if there's too many of them, we're going to pay a deep price to society. Those are people who could have been very, very much a positive impact on society and contributed to society in a very positive way, and because of their background, because of the fact that they were poor, some of them never reached their potential. And that's a very much a negative for the country. We pay, and here's the bottom line. Poverty can be eradicated with a little bit of money and a little bit of effort and a little bit of common human decency, but we don't seem to have the political will, and shame on us.
Well, we were moving in that direction, and, you know, when I was a kid, to be honest, the Great Society programs, I remember. I remember the school lunch programs in the summertime where kids would line up at the local school. And that hot meal that they got at lunchtime, probably the only hot meal they got all day, but it was something that kept them going. And it was something that helped the people in my community. Now, maybe it didn't help middle America. Maybe it didn't help the very wealthy. But it helped those kids immensely. And when Ronald Reagan took office, wiped all that stuff out. Because after all, ketchup is a vegetable. And again, you know, that kind of mindset is what took us down the wrong path to begin with.
But they'll tell you, Ronald Reagan's and the conservatives will tell you, well, that's a responsibility of the private sector and the churches.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
unfortunately, too many...
It's working.
Too many... Tell that to the people in Appalachia.
Yeah.
There's too many people who fall through the cracks.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On Thursday, President Obama, supported by labor and progressive groups coast to coast, pushed again for passage of his American Jobs Act and its $50 billion investment in repairing the nation's crumbling infrastructure. Unions and progressive groups rallied at bridges needing repair in at least 11 major cities. A new report from the Public Interest Research Group says 69,000 structurally deficient bridges are in urgent need of repair to make them safe. Lauren Wiener is with the progressive group United for Change.
We need to make sure that they're safe to drive on, and we need to make sure that we're putting Americans back to work, and we think this is a great way to do that.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined tens of thousands of California nurses and healthcare workers on picket lines Thursday at Kaiser Permanente. Their one-day strike protested moves by Kaiser and by Sutter Hospitals to cut health benefits, pensions, and patient services. Deanne McEwen is co-president of the California Nurses Association.
We're standing in solidarity with other workers on behalf of the patients in our community because these healthcare corporations, they're proposing vicious cuts to nurses' retirement security, healthcare coverage, and really encumbering our ability to make professional practice decisions that help keep our patients safe.
Striking Tacoma Washington Education Association teachers are expected back in their classrooms today after reaching a contract agreement that ended their strike. About 1,900 teachers went on strike September 13th over staffing issues, class sizes, and pay cuts. The striking teachers defied a court's back-to-work order and remained on the picket lines until a negotiated settlement was reached. President Obama's health care reform has made sure that 1 million uninsured young adults are now covered. Jesse Russell reports.
The Affordable Health Care for America Act is starting to see some measurable statistics. One of the most noticeable, and the one President Barack Obama will likely hang his hat on while seeking younger voters, is allowing young adults to stay on their parents' health plans until they turn 26. That piece of the legislation forced equality in how plans treated young adults, company by company, and state by state. The number of uninsured young adults between the ages of 19 and 25 declined by nearly 1 million in 3 months. While some Republican presidential candidates have been running on the message, repeal the whole bill, most Beltway insiders see that move as unlikely, as it would be unpopular to suddenly yank health care out from under the feet of these young adults. On Tuesday, Obama announced $109 million in grants, would be split up between 29 states to assist in health insurer oversight. The grants are in tandem with new rules enacted under the Health Care Act requiring insurers to declare publicly the reasons for any premium increases above 10%.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the OPEIU and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Absence works. Maybe it's the way it's being taught or the way that it's being applied out there. But the fact of the matter is, it is the best form of to teach our children.
I want to be a cowboy. You can be my cowgirl. I'm
We can talk about abstinence. We can teach it. We can apply it. Because maybe it's not being taught and applied right. I mean, is that really the dumbest thing you've ever heard? It works. See, if they don't do it, it works. Yeah, you dimwit. But here's the thing. They do it. Wake up to the reality of what is. Not what's banging around in that pea brain, but what actually in real life happens. It must be how it's being taught. Must be how it's being applied. Yeah, you dimwit. It's how it's being applied. Kids are going, oh, hey, thanks for the information. I'm going to do it anyway. Wow. It worked in my case. Yeah, probably. Well, there's a whole bunch of rumors going on around Rick Perry. And to get to the bottom of some of that, he is back. Larry Flint, the founder and chief honcho over at Hustler Magazine, is willing to pay up to $1 million if they publish your varied story about whatever illicit sexual or intimate relation anyone has with Rick Perry. So there might be some young gent out there who might come tell the tale, because I keep hearing the rumor. There's a bunch of rumors out there that, maybe he's someone who, hops the fence every once in a while. So that'll be an interesting, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I guess before.
Back after the whole Lewinsky thing.
Yes.
There was a guy who became Speaker of the House. I think his name was Bob Livingston. He became, mm-hmm. I think he was Speaker of the House for like a day. It was a couple of days. And then he had to come out and say, hey, I cheated on my wife, and then stepped aside.
Who's out of, he's out of Congress, by the way.
Oh, he's long out of Congress, but,
I think he was from Illinois.
I don't recall, but, he did end up,
In fact, I think they found out he had like four or five affairs.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing when they found out about Gingrich.
He was coming down hard on, well, the problem was they wanted to impeach, Bill Clinton about that whole, lying thing and having extramarital affairs.
I don't care.
I think they call it, I think they call it hypocrisy.
Yeah, I didn't care about Clinton. And, to me, the whole thing should have never come about. That's something that you keep your mind out of. Unless you're being a hypocrite about it, that's one thing. I'm a firm believer in whatever two consenting adults do within the confines of their own space, as long as they're not infringing on anybody else, leave it alone.
So I don't happen to believe that an extramarital affair, it's immoral, but I don't think it has very much effect on their performance. However, as we talked about several times on the show, I think it's fair if you're one of these, family values guys, and all of a sudden it breaks that you've been all the time you're preaching family values, you were having an affair. Now that's a legitimate political issue. It comes down to your integrity.
Well, if you're a do as I say, not as I do kind of guy, or girl, absolutely. Which is why I find it interesting that the, if you listen to the debate the other night, when the gay soldier asked a question, the entire crowd booed. And Rick Santorum kind of, I would repeal it. He is now, I guess, the rational one on gay issues. He's condemned the booing of this question. And I look at the Republican Party, and I got to be honest, it's kind of weird to me. First, you got a guy, you got a bunch of people who are saying, kill him, let him die. Another one, another crowd saying, hey, congratulations, Rick Perry, on killing your 234th person. I guess now it's up to 235 with the killing of that guy the other night. You know, these are the family values people. You know, these are the values people. And interestingly enough, there is a Republican from Florida. Her name's Alina Ross Letton. She has become the very first co-sponsor, the first Republican co-sponsor of the Respect for Marriage Act. That is going to, and I guess the purpose of this, and it's not going to pass, no way in a cold day, but it's going to repeal the Anti-Gay Defense of Marriage Act. So I guess that has to happen before you can move forward and allow same-sex couples to marry. And look, I think I've made my position pretty clear on it. I don't care. Let them marry. Let them enjoy all of the spoils of marriage that heterosexuals have. Let them have 50% divorce rates. Let them, you know, do whatever it is that they do.
Well, I think the sad part was, I believe this guy didn't. He's on active duty now, I believe. The serviceman who asked that question, and from what I heard on Santorum when they asked him about it, he said, "Well, I didn't," which is hard to believe. He said, "I really didn't hear the booing." I mean, come on, how could he not hear the booing?
Didn't hear it?
I guess not, or you know, I think he was probably just swatting it away so he didn't sound bad. But it's hard to believe that he's the most progressive voice among that group.
Just
on gay rights, he has never been.
Just kind of missed the booing.
Never been anything but far right on that issue.
Just missed the booing. Speaking of insane, you know, in Texas, they just killed number 235. And not somebody I think anybody's going to really miss. This guy, Lawrence Brewer, who, you know, as the story goes, he was one of the people who chained this gentleman, Mr. Bird, to the back of his truck and drug him around. What I find really incredible, though, I think it was his son. It was either his son or his brother. I think it was his son who came out, this James Bird, and came out and said, "Look, you know, I want you to, the state, the people, to show this guy, this brewer, the mercy that he never showed my brother." And I find that kind of compassion, that kind of forgiveness to be just amazing. And I was talking about it with my wife the other night, and you know, it's kind of like the shooting that happened to the Amish folks here not too long ago, where they, you know, they actually went to the woman's house, and you know, we forgave the guy for shooting their children, and it was really just, you know, very foreign to me. But again, it comes back down to these are the true Christian values. I mean, if we're truly a Christian nation, that's kind of the forgiveness.
That's actually what the Bible teaches, especially in
the New Testament.
To forgive your enemies, to forgive those who persecute you, that is in the Bible. And I think
that's one in the part that no one reads.
That's one thing that really bothers me about the right wing. I mean, they like to talk about religion and protecting religious rights. And according to Governor Perry, religion should be an integral part of government. But yet, when you come down to it, some of the things they do and what they advocate is really diametrically opposed to what the Bible says. And that's not me interpreting. It's there.
Yeah.
It's there, and they just flagrantly ignore it because it doesn't fit into their political ideology.
So I look at the death of number 235, this Lawrence Brewer, and again, nobody's going to miss him. But, you know, there's some folks who are not happy about his last meal. And he had a pretty substantial last meal, and I guess if it's going to be your last, you might as well chow down. He had two chicken fried steaks, a triple meat bacon cheeseburger, a cheese omelet, I guess he's not worried about his cholesterol, a large bowl of fried okra, three fajitas,
wow,
a pint of Blue Bell ice cream, and a pound of barbecue on a half of a loaf of white bread. So, I mean, he had a pretty substantial meal.
They must have given him basically anything he wanted.
Well, it's your last meal. You get whatever you want. That's been the kind of tradition.
That's a good question. I wonder what mine would be. I'd have to think about that.
I think yours would just be yes.
There you go.
So now you got this Democratic state senator down there in Texas, a guy named John Whitmer, and he's really peeved. You know, this is extremely inappropriate, he says. You know,
for
this
last meal.
Yeah, he says, you know, the perpetrator didn't provide that to their victim, which is true. You know, the Houston Press reported Whitmer wrote a letter to the Texas Criminal Justice Division, pretty much, and they're saying asked, I would say kind of, you know, demanding that they end the practice. He says, I'm asking you to end the practice immediately or I'm prepared to do so in the next, by statute next session. So the guy who's the head of the Criminal Justice Division, a guy named Brad Livingston, and he went along with it. He put out a thing saying immediately, effective immediately, no such accommodations will be made. They, meaning the those to be executed, will receive the same meal that other offenders receive in the unit. And you know, part of me goes, you know, conservatives are very tradition-oriented, supposedly. Isn't that kind of like a traditional ritual? I mean, it's, you know, you're going to kill somebody. That's kind of tradition. I remember, you know, seeing the old cowboy movies. You know, what's your last wish? You know, you want a last cigarette, your last meal. I mean, it's kind of ingrained, isn't it?
Yeah, I always thought it was.
But I got to be honest, that's pretty.
Well,
that's extensive.
That's all about. I don't know his intentions, but he probably wants either notoriety for whatever reason, or maybe even has aspirations to run for office.
There you go.
It's just a trick. I mean, come on.
So number two.
I'll tell you what. If Texas is saving that much money, I'll tell you what. We'll make sure that the state of Texas gets the added $20 or whatever it costs. I mean, come on. That's silly.
But I just find it. I find it interesting. And going back to this, where in one case you had the family of the police officer who was killed, who couldn't wait to have Troy Davis put to death. And I got to be honest, I'm not going to put myself in their position. I'm not going to put them down. I'm just saying it's something that catches my eye. And this relative of the Byrd family, a good number of them, came and said, you know, show him some forgiveness. That's interesting to me. That's an interesting dynamic. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
You know what's wrong with the American economy, bucko? You, that's what. Yeah, it's true that the reckless global gambling schemes of Wall Street bankers are what wrecked our economy. And yes, Congress and the Federal Reserve have used trillions of our public dollars to bail out miscreant bankers, while ignoring the plight of people like you whose jobs, businesses, homes, and middle-class incomes have been devastated by banker greed. And sure, it's also true that corporations are hoarding $2 trillion in cash and getting billions of dollars a year in subsidies from taxpayers like you, yet refusing to hire Americans or to make job-creating investments in our country. But blah, 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 bucko. This does not excuse your refusal to do your duty as an American consumer. CEOs say that they won't start hiring until you consumer slugs get out there and spend, spend, spend. And don't use the whiny excuse that you're out of work or mired in debt. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says that he has looked at macroeconomic statistics and concluded that you're being irrationally negative about the health of our economy. Households seem exceptionally cautious, declared the perplexed Fed Chairman recently, suggesting that your lack of confidence in the economy is a psychosis that's fueling a larger depression. Yes, chimed in another Federal Reserve banker, it's hard to have a robust recovery when Americans are so dispirited. So hey, perk up, America! Stop waiting on Wall Street, Washington, and corporate chieftains to do something. Forget economic reality. Just pull out your credit cards, put on a smile, and march to the mall. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow. I can't tell you how much more confidence I have in the future health of our economy, knowing that America's corporate and political leaders are so insightful and so in touch. How about you?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And I'm still working my plan. There's only one.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, it's right there on the website. You can listen to it there, watch the video, or you can, if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. So, the NRA Executive Vice President, Wayne LaPierre, he was talking at the Conservative Political Action Conference today, CPAC. He said, Obama himself is no fool. So when he got elected, they concocted a scheme to stay away from the gun issue, lull gun owners to sleep, and play us for fools in 2012. Well, gun owners are not fools, and we are not fooled, he says. He went on to say the Obama campaign will say gun owners, they'll say they left you alone. Left you alone. In public, he'll remind us that he's put off calls from his party to renew the Clinton assault weapons ban. And he hasn't pushed for any new gun control laws. And he hasn't. I mean, I think the guy's had some other problems. I think there's a lot more stuff on the plate. LaPierre says the president will offer the Second Amendment lip service and hit the campaign trail saying that he's actually been good for the Second Amendment. But it's a big, fat, stinking lie. It's all part of a massive Obama conspiracy to deceive voters and to destroy the Second Amendment in our Constitution. We really need to get this guy a tin hat. We got to get him some tinfoil because the guy's just cooked. I mean, I don't think at any point did Obama ever say anything about anything having to do with guns. And I followed him really closely in 2008. The gun issue wasn't even on the radar. The fact that he has done nothing, did not even give lip service to maybe possibly even considering extending the assault weapons ban, even though just about every police organization in this country wants it, he didn't get involved in it. Let it go. But here again, you got to whip up that, I guess maybe membership's coming down. Because if you remember, he would say, well, he's not going to go after the guns, no. He's going to raise the price of bullets 500%. Remember that?
Yes, I was just going to say that. Absolutely right.
Going to raise the price of bullets 500%. So when the price of bullets started going out, because every nitwit with a gun ran out and bought everything off the shelf, and the supply and demand of capitalism took effect, the prices started going up. They're going, see, Obama's raising prices. And the smart people go, hey, dum-dums, stop buying so many bullets. That's what's raising the price. You're causing a shortage.
Well, look, I know enough about the NRA to know this is about sensationalism. He wants money into his organization. That's what he wants. Because if you have that, you know, that boogeyman out there stealing your guns, you're going to want to support the NRA even more with your money.
It's just, you know, again, but, you know, right after Obama took office, their membership rolls, as I remember, did perk up because people, oh, the Obama's going to steal our guns. He's going to come knock on your door. Give me the gun. Give me the gun. And people bought it. Yeah, there's so many more things that need to be done. So many more. But we live in a paranoid world. There's enough going on that's right in front of us. There's enough bad stuff going on, like the Republicans trying to destroy the safety nets, defunding a good portion of WIC programs and a good portion of public aid programs and foreign aid programs, for that matter. Just insane. But you can buy your comic books. Get your comic books early. Evidently, the Blue Water Production Group is producing some new comic books. Michelle Bachman, Rick Perry, and Mitt Romney will all have their own brand new Blue Water Production comic book, as well as the Tea Party. So get them early, get them often. Collector's items could be quite possible. In fact, the USA Today got a sneak peek of the coveted Michelle Bachman comic book. And there she is, some illustrations of her and her five kids, and of course, the whole brood of 23. Because obviously she'll be sure to tell you that she, you know, had helped raise 23 kids as a foster parent. So, good. There you go. Some money goes into this. Sarah Palin had one. Hillary Clinton had one. So now you've got all these. Now they're looking at some of the, maybe some other candidates as well. So, good, good, good. And speaking of Sarah Palin, evidently, the Des Moines Register obtained a fundraising letter from Sarah Pack. Turns out Sarah Pack's out raising some money, and her treasurer, a guy named Tim Crawford, saying she's on the verge. She's right there. Personally, I want to know what verge she's on, but she says, you know, making one tough, difficult decision, one of the most difficult decisions of her life. She's now sitting on about $1.7 million, which is what she's raised through the first 6 months of this year, into Sarah Pack. I'm not sure. I don't know if she's going to jump in or not. I can't imagine that she would, because, well, maybe she will. I mean, the reality is Michelle Bachmann, the space that Sarah will fill, has plummeted. You know, she's not even on half the polls anymore. Her star has fallen because I think most people looked at her and go, you know, kind of kooky, kind of off on the deep end, kind of, you know, just a little lost, you know, with a whole bunch of the nonsense.
We have to be an ownership society where individual responsibility, personal responsibility, once again becomes the animating American principle, and we can't be ashamed of that.
Yeah. You see, great things like that, and you got to love her. You know, she's not all there most of the time.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, we are. We're running out of rich
under
people.
Under Obama.
We'll do some shagging up here. If you want to shag a little bit.
See, now I'd pay to see that. but no, I mean, she's kind of out of this. So, and that's kind of a good thing. Some fresh blood in there. Maybe Sarah will fill that. What do you think? You think Palin's going to jump in? I don't.
I think in the end, no. I think she'll tantalize some of her supporters to increase the income to her personally, but in the end, no.
I think she'll want to play kingmaker. I think she's going to take in a bunch of money.
I think so.
I think that's what it's about. How much money can she put into her pocket and, you know, play kingmaker? Because I just can't imagine her giving up the high-paying gigs.
No.
I just can't imagine her giving up the money.
Well, and the truth is, she'll give up some independence. I mean, even if they would win and she'd be vice president, a lot of people wouldn't be.
She's not going to be vice president.
Well,
nobody would make that mistake again.
Well, she certainly. There's no way that she can win the Republican nomination.
Nobody makes that mistake of making Sarah Palin the number two again. I mean, she might be full of number two, but no one's going to make that mistake again.
Ooh.
Nobody. Nobody. I think it's going to be Rubio. That's the guess I've got. Personally, I think the guy who may jump in at some point into the presidential realm might be Christie. That ad I played the other night, you know, kind of, you know, touting his pedigree out there a bit.
The talk is that Rubio is looking at not as vice president, but presidential candidate in 16. So, be interesting to see. Probably, to be honest, and I certainly don't want to help the Republicans, but someone like that, who's a new face, doesn't have the political scars, that probably would be a good choice as vice president.
Well, you throw
seems
him
to
out
be
there,
pretty popular. Out. He seems to be pretty popular
there.
In the state.
Get his name out there, get him in front of people, doing the whole, you know, FaceTime stuff, kissing babies, shaking hands. It couldn't hurt him. And he's scary. I mean, really, honestly, and truthfully, I think he's scary. Because people will look at him, oh, what a nice young man.
Mm-hmm. Until you listen to it.
Let's let the insanity take over. yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, but yesterday the Sherrod Brown and Bob Casey, a couple of Republicans, a couple of Democrats, put forth the Currency Exchange Rate Oversight Act of 2011. And, you know, looking at the Chinese currency manipulation, saying, hey, you know, about time we stop this. And it's probably not a bad idea. Maybe it's time we stop letting someone else eat our lunch. Especially because you look at the EPI numbers that just came out that said 2.8 million American jobs were lost or displaced in the last decade because of our trade deficit with the Chinese. In fact, 1.9 million of those jobs were in manufacturing. And, you know, you look at the Tea Party, and this kind of popped into my head as, you know, I was talking to a neighbor. These used to be manufacturing guys. I think a lot of these Tea Party people were folks who worked in manufacturing. You worked at a lot of these plants that are now gone. Like this guy that I was talking to worked over at one of the local closed down manufacturing plants, and they're angry. They just don't know what to be angry about or at who. And I say, you know, this is a good place to start. The fact that we've allowed the Chinese to manipulate their currency, we've allowed them to heavily, heavily subsidize industries and then allow them to bring those products and dump here into the U.S. I don't care if you subsidize your product, your companies in your own country. But then don't put us in a competition with them because we're not going to be able to compete. So this Currency Exchange Rate Oversight Act of 2011, they claim, you know, help to allow the Chinese to allow their currency to rise in value to where they claim is its equilibrium, which would be a 28.5% appreciation. And they're saying, look, we could 2 million, 2.2 million jobs we could create. It'd be a boost to our GDP of about 2%. Our trade deficit would come down by, you know, about $190 billion. And we see some deficit reduction as well. And it's one of the things that I talked about during the entire debt talks. If we could do something about our trade deficits. And they're saying, look, you know, over the next 10 years, we could save $850 billion over 10 years. That's a smart thing. And I'm hoping this goes through because it's had bipartisan support in the past. And it's overwhelmingly passed in both, in one chamber or the other at different times. Now it's just a matter of getting this together and saying, you know what, T-Twits, this is what you ran on, jobs. Here's a good start. Good start. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, right back after this.
Welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you. The president talked about No Child Left Behind. He said that there have been 44 states plus the District of Columbia that have requested a waiver. They want to give it if schools have higher standards and if there is some college readiness. People like Randy Weingarten, who I don't know if you talked to last Saturday night, but anyhow, Randy said that this was an imperfect solution. She basically wants Congress to deal with it. She said that essentially there needs to be more teacher evaluation on focusing on teacher evaluation, but not necessarily at how they've improved teaching, but not, she said, simply just sorting. She essentially said that they need to focus on improvement because some kids come into school in school districts and they're a disaster to begin with.
Yep.
Sort of mixed. In fact, when the Chamber of Commerce came out, more in favor of the president's view. pretty wild.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. And the Republicans who, you know, kind of were against this from the beginning are beating him up for doing what they wanted him to do.
Yes.
Again, I mean,
you know, they've never missed an opportunity to find a way that this president is somebody they don't like.
You know, I look at the NRA guy coming out and saying, well, you know, he hasn't come after the guns, but he will, and he's going to tell us how wonderful he was for the Second Amendment. You know, he thinks we're stupid. He hasn't come after us. And I'm going, well, isn't that what you want? It's nuts.
It's completely nuts. Meanwhile, what's going on in Congress is completely nuts. But listen, one of the things that we've heard is that Governor Christie is being really moved towards the vice presidency. People have been coming to talk to him, urging him to run for the vice president. And interesting, people apparently have been getting on airplanes to talk to him. That's sort of what we're hearing from our inside sources.
Why would he want to be number two when, judging from the list of malcontents they've got up there now, he could probably win?
Well, he probably could, but, you know, that's a formidable job to try and raise all that money, to be on the road all the time. Better to do it as a vice president. And then maybe in 4 or 8 years, run yourself, again, when you've had a little more behind it. My guess is that will probably be in the running for a VP pick. May not be totally, but certainly in the running.
Yeah, I thought Marco Rubio was already the zipped-up candidate, the guy who was going to be, no matter who it was going to be the guy.
Well, in fact, the folks I've talked to from the Democrat side are absolutely convinced that he is going to be the nominee.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this whole showdown, another hostage situation, another potential government shutdown. What's going on here?
Well, you have a difference of $3.65 billion in this continuing resolution having to do with all of the disasters that we have. Yesterday it went down 219 to 203 in the House, and today today in the Senate it went 59 to 36. The House bill was not passed. So there you have, the House passes a bill that they absolutely know the Senate isn't going to pass. The Senate does not pass it. And so that's pretty much what happened. Now, Jay Carney today said, well, he said the fever has not been broken. They knew that they would come up with a continuing resolution that they would not pass. The House is threatening to go out of session. It's sort of a game of blinksmanship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just nuts to me. I mean, do your job already. Your approval rating is horrible. Nobody wants that. I mean, the mayor of Harrisburg has a higher approval rating, and nobody can stand her. It's just nuts.
Well, the thing is that no wonder the stock market is going down. If you were an investor from a foreign country and you were not a United States citizen, is this a country you would invest in? They can't get it together on a budget. There's one group that is always saying no to absolutely every compromise because they want to win an election. And you just wouldn't invest, and it's going to come back to haunt us.
Yeah, it's scary, scary times. You know, I look at these debates, and there's really something wrong with Rick Santorum. Seems the rational one on gay issues. I mean, I guess nothing should surprise me. I mean, one debate they were cheering, people dying. Another one they were cheering Perry having, you know, executed 234, now 235 people. Is it any surprise that they'd be cheering or booing someone that asks a question about don't ask, don't tell?
It's really quite shocking, and I think it is that kind of discourse that's going to get them in trouble. You know, people say to me, Obama, he can't possibly win. And I say, wait a minute, look what he's up against.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it scares me that I know anyone can win, given the right amount of money and the right messaging and the right conditions if the economy doesn't turn around. But I look at all of the things that have been going on. I'm scared. And you know, the Borowitz report yesterday was Canada going to build a 20-foot high electric fence on the Canadian-American border. That may be actually true if one of those guys win.
Well, I have great confidence in the American people that one of these guys is not going to win.
I certainly hope so. And I wanted to wish you a happy birthday. Thank you for inviting us to your to an amazing birthday party.
Well, thank you for coming, and I hope your daughter had a great time.
Oh, absolutely. She was thrilled that she got to buy a couple of goats. And she was thrilled with the necklace that we picked up, so that she could go back and tell all of her classmates where it came from. I thought it was an amazing, learning opportunity for her, but also, an amazing event.
Well, thank you for coming and hope I'll see you at more events.
I appreciate the invites and we will certainly try.
Great. Thank you.
Evelyn Ratner, I appreciate the time. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. An interesting article coming out of the Hills campaign blog. Well, the infamous Paul Ryan, the congressman from Wisconsin, apparently, has been pegged by the Republican National Committee. Their chairman, who's Rance Priebus, apparently, him and Representative Ryan are close friends. He has been pegged to lead the GOP effort to raise money to defeat President Obama in this fall. Ryan, who chairs the House Budget Committee, proposed a budget back in April that would have slashed trillions from the government spending, in part by privatizing Medicare and converting Medicaid into block grants. Ryan's name has frequently been floated as a possible presidential candidate, which should put fear in every liberal's heart, but he has ruled out that out for a 2012 bid, but hasn't ruled out maybe running in 2016. Good report on the what our enemies like to call Obamacare. Last week, the Obama administration announced that Medicare Advantage premiums would be decreasing by about 4% in 2012 as enrollment increased by 1%. Reduced premiums and increased benefits are the exact opposite of what insurers and Republicans had predicted that would happen to Medicare's passage of the Affordable Care Act. Washington Post had listed three factors which is putting downward pressure in Medicare. First, Medicare costs are growing more slowly. In private insurance, the recession has correlated with patients using fewer medical benefits, which is particularly true for the elderly. Second, the Medicare risk pool is becoming younger. And third, the free preventive care for seniors, which has been brought by the Act, has also resulted in substantial future savings. Maybe those of you who are on Medicare want to listen up on this. This year, the enrollment period, every year there's an open enrollment period. For those of you who have Medicare, you have Medicare Advantage, or you're in the Medicare prescription drug supplement coverage, and you want to change your program a little bit, any beneficiary has the right in the open enrollment to do that. This year the dates have been changed. This year the dates will be from October 15th through December 7th. Last year they were November 15th through December 31st, so what they've done is add an additional week. Let me repeat that for those of you who are on Medicare. That open enrollment this year is October 15th through December 7th.
What were those dates again?
October 15th through December 7th. Okay. You and I talked about this several times, and I know you and I how we feel about those judges up in Luzerne County who were involved in that Kids for Cash case. One of the judges who has been sentenced earlier was sentenced to, I believe, 28 years in prison. Well, just this week, another former judge who was involved in this kickback scheme has been sentenced to about 17 and a half years in prison. Former Luzerne County Judge Michael Conahan, who's 59, of course, apologized to the court and said the system isn't corrupt, I'm corrupt. That's of him to say that. He pleaded guilty to racketeering conspiracy last year. He and former Judge Caravelli were charged with taking bribes from the builder of a pair of juvenile detention centers and extorting cash from the facility's co-owner. Caravello, again, was convicted of some of the charges at trial. He was sentenced last month to 28 years. He didn't cooperate. This judge did cooperate with prosecutors, and I think because of that, not only was his sentence limited to 17 and a half years, but here's what I don't quite understand. U.S. District Court Justice Edward Kozik recommended that this judge be placed in a federal prison camp in Florida so that he could be close to his family. I don't know how I feel about that. I have a problem with that. I mean, judges that would put innocent teenagers in jail so they can enrich themselves have to be the worst of the worst. And I'm not so sure that the court system should be sending that message just because he cooperated with prosecutors. We're bending over backwards for this guy. I mean, I don't care what it is.
The question is if it were you or me or anybody else, would they get the same consideration? And if that answer is no, then sorry.
And I have my doubts. As far as I'm concerned, both those judges are scum. We talked about highways and deteriorating highways and bridges. A study has named two central Pennsylvania highway interchanges among the most congested in the U.S. According to a Federal Highway Administration, they named the central Pennsylvania highway interchange of Interstates 80 and 83 and Interstates 81 and 78 among the top 250 worst for traffic congestion in the U.S. The I-81 and 83 interchange in Dauphin County ranked 101st on the hit list, and Lebanon County's I-81-78 interchange was 235th. The results were based on a 2010 study that used GPS devices to study truck speeds at rush hour and other times of the day. I-78 and I-676 in Philadelphia was named the 25th most congested, and I-76 and I-476 in Philadelphia was named 38th. I-70 and I-79 in Pittsburgh was named 88. So it seems like Pennsylvania's roads are not only used at extremely large volume, but they are some of the most congested in the country. Back to you, Rick.
Well, basically what we've been saying, the need to improve, the need to upgrade, the need to have a vision down the road. Again, you know, this is why we need some public transportation, especially right here. Where are you going to go? You can't build out. When I lived in Allentown, they had talked about building an express above Route 22. They're actually going to build right on top of 22 to run through Allentown. That was back 18 years ago. They were talking about it, and now it's immensely worse than it was when I first moved there. It was bad when I moved there. It's worse now. It's horrible. You know, had they done that then, it would be in place and it would be making, again, just mind-blowing. 1-888-520-RICK. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We want the world and we want it now.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
On June 25, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Rick Smith Show.
Okay, we need help. We need help. This heinous crime. This dangerous criminal. You need to be on the lookout. Police in Sevens Grove. Right now, they are working diligently. Overtime, calling in extra troopers, putting up sting operations, doing surveillance. They are trying to determine who put hot chicken wings in this woman's mailbox. Yeah, it's true. Evidently, things in Sevens Grove must be so boring. The crime must be so non-existent that chicken wings in the mailbox, well, that's worth calling the state police over. Because evidently the wings were discovered about 11:30 a.m. this morning by Edith Rice. Edith is the one who lives at the residence in question. Police said they believed that the delivery was made sometime after 5 p.m. on Thursday. And they're asking anyone with any information, because they are investigating this diligently, they're going to get to the bottom of this disorderly conduct charge. And if you're the guy, you should turn yourself in, throw yourself on the mercy of the court, and explain why in the hell you'd put chicken wings in somebody's mailbox.
I guess I have a question. I think you, especially, and probably me, we would want to know the number so we can thank him or her.
Well, I mean, not sitting in the mailbox overnight. You know, I'm not going to eat. Chicken's one of those things that goes bad overnight. But you know, if you're going to leave me hot wings, I like hot wings. Had some for lunch today. Knock on the door and say, "Hey, Rick, here's some hot wings. Congratulations."
Probably I'd wash them down, put them in the microwave, put some sauce on, and probably enjoy them.
You'd probably drop them on the ground and eat them right off the floor. But that's, you know, never mind. So good. We're gonna get to the bottom of the hot wing fiasco. Here's another one of those dangerous criminals. Thank goodness we're putting this man away. Thank goodness, the Patriot News reported a Cumberland County man who was prosecuted. Evidently, he made more than 7,000 phone calls asking mid-state women about their pantyhose. That's right, he had a pantyhose fetish. And he made 7,000 phone calls to women. The judge sentenced him to 9 to 24 months in state prison. So the guy, you know, and look, if you're 43 years old and you're still making prank phone calls, maybe you do need some help. But Rip Schwartz, 43, Shiremanstown resident, going to be doing a little time. He used to be a door-to-door salesman. That worries me a lot more than him making some phone calls. If he's a guy who's making prank phone calls, what's he doing knocking on my door? But he will then serve 5 years probation after being released from prison. I said it was a very stupid and selfish thing for him to do. I think it's just a dumb thing. And I think what's even dumber is that we're putting him in jail for 2 years for making prank phone calls. I can't imagine what would have happened to me as a teenager, or many teenagers who, you know, do some dumb stuff. I don't know. Here's somebody who belongs in jail, and good for him, Mark Permenter. He evidently apologized, according to the Patriot News, to the judge for making child porn with kids as young as 7 years old. He's getting 30 years in prison plus 20 years of probation if and when he's released. But here again, you know, this whole thing of making child porn with kids as young as 7, you know, I understand the whole vigilante thing. I get it. It was my kid. Jail would be the least of his worries. But here, you know, this is one of these rules that my wife and I have. And I cannot believe, and I'm reading through the story, and he was babysitting people's kids. Now, I have this rule. I'm sorry. I guess I'm sexist. I will not let a man watch my children. Not happening. Because of guys like this. And I don't know many people who are rational in thought. Who would do that? Who would put their kids with, with a man, especially someone like that? So good for him, 30 years in jail. Your neck of the woods, Jake. The president will be in town. Former President George W. Bush, going to be in Hershey. I wonder how much the Chamber of Commerce is paying him. But he's going to be there with 1,800 business leaders, elected officials, and a whole bunch of people wanting to glad hand. And they're thrilled to have him. He's going to talk about his time in the White House and reflect. It would be nice if he were to reflect, I have to be nice. It's the weekend. Thank goodness it's Friday. This has been one of those long, long weeks. Even though it was only a four-day week for me, but still very, very long week. Have you seen this? This is a couple of months, I guess maybe about 10 months ago, there was these things called flat daddies, where people would donate these cardboard cutouts of soldiers who were serving in Iraq so that people could then put them in their houses. So that you could have dad at dinner or mom at dinner, having this cardboard cut out. Personally, I thought it was very creepy, and I thought it was kind of bizarre. But I bought a couple of them because my wife, basically forced me into
fundraisers.
Yeah, extorted me into it. wasn't that what they do? I went to McDonald's the other morning, and I had like a $3 bill, and I had to use my credit card. The woman's looking at me funny. I go, I got robbed again. She goes, really, you got robbed? I go, yeah, I get robbed all the time. She goes, really? I go, I call the police, and they don't do anything about it. She goes, really? I go, yeah, my wife steals money out of my wallet all the time. And she goes, oh, you're just being funny. I go, but the cops won't do anything about it. What good are they? So she does this to me all the time. So interestingly enough, I bought these flat daddy things, and I thought it was really, really kind of creepy. But, as Brett, our super producer, said, at least, the people that you were buying these cutouts of were people who are alive. I look at this story in Japan where there's this company who is now making and donating actual life-size look-alike dolls. Dolls of people who were killed in the earthquake back on March 11th. And I go, I really kind of don't think that's such a good idea. I mean, it's kind of creepy, isn't it? I mean, at what point do we then start stuffing our loved ones and putting them in the corner? Oh, look, there's Joe. There's John. How are you doing today, John? Well, stuffed. Thoughts? It's kind of weird, don't you think?
Yes.
I don't know that I would want to be stuffed. It would take a lot of stuffing, but I don't know that I'd want to be stuffed. But we do some really bizarre stuff, I'll tell you. Really kind of crazy. Anyway, again, if you missed any portion of our program, TheRickSmithShow.com is where our podcasts are, and that's where you can also find video. And if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and, of course, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and I'm looking forward to the weekend. Tomorrow is my daughter's third birthday. On our Facebook page, there's a picture up of my daughter sitting on my shoulders at the rally today in Hershey for the J1 students where all the SEIU folks came out. And I've had her on my shoulders and she wanted a snack. So Bright, being the smart father, go, yes, here, sweetie, have your granola bar with chocolate chips in it.
Uh-huh.
While sitting on my shoulders. What do you think she used as a table?
Your head.
That's right, the top of my head. So there I am picking out pieces of granola and chocolate chips, and I look at her hands, and her hands are all full of chocolate.
And
she wipes
wiping
her
your head.
Exactly.
Well, perhaps chocolate enriches the quality of your hair.
Maybe not. But it was a great event today, and it's one of those moments that I love bringing my kids to those things because it gives them a little different perspective. I think my daughter, my oldest daughter, has a much different world view than most of her friends. And I know at 9 they're not supposed to have world views yet, but she is more compassionate, I think, than the average person. And I think that's a good thing. And, it's one of those things that we're really trying to instill in our kids that you need to be socially conscious, and you need to make sure that, you help others. And again, I wish we would, as a society, think more in those terms. I think we would have a lot less problems, and I think we would have a lot less division. And I look at what's going on in Washington, and it's really frustrating and angering and scary, because the reality is, if we continue down this path where we're going in opposite directions, we're in big trouble economically, societally, as a democracy, we're screwed. And I look at this big rig going on here, like talking with State Representative Joe Marcosic. It's a diversion. It's a distraction. It's a theft of our democracy. But you've got a Republican Party who's hell bent on changing how Pennsylvania allocates its electors, and it's wrong. It's a theft, and you should call your representatives and tell them no more. Absolutely no more. Anyway, have a great weekend. We will be back here on Monday again, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, also Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. See you Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tide flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.